I don't like your jerk off name. I don't like your jerk off face. I don't like your jerk off behavior. And I don't like you, jerk off.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 59 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And this is our Christmas episode. Now, technically, we will be releasing another episode prior to Christmas, but that's going to be our Rogue One episode. So we're going to be far too interested in Star Wars to worry about this ho-ho-ho shit. So we're having a bit of a Christmas drink-up today, aren't we, kids?
Oh, yeah.
Big time. We should probably put a photo of what we're drinking today. There is strong brew, there's whiskey, and we've got something else as well that will be perfect for the rewatch.
Indeed. We all turned up at my house pretty much simultaneously, having been to the off licenses before, all carrying plastic bags of booze.
Ooh, I'll join you on that one there.
Let's get started. Already. On the booze,
there
that is.
There we go. Ooh.
Have we all been in the intervening 2 weeks since we last recorded?
Really good. I've been practicing my drinking because people will know I can usually drink two or three pints, then I'm on my arse. And we've got 2 hour show today, I'm sure. So I've really got to try and build up that stamina.
And the whole world is about to find out just how much of a light ass I really am. Sorry.
Please do forgive the slurring.
At least you've got a disclaimer. I've got braces, yeah, so I've got to do an extra disclaimer.
She always slurs. Sorry, Gemma.
It's fine. It's true. It's funny because it's true.
Oh, we've got
episode 59.
I know. It's ridiculous. We're so close to the big 6-0. We've got a shitload to cover on this episode, though. So let's have a think about it. What film are we reviewing, Mark?
Bad Santa 2.
Indeed. What's that sequel to? I
can't. Yeah, well, it's going to be a good one. And it goes really well with our Christmas episode. It's as if we planned far ahead.
Synergy.
I love it.
That's boats what that is. And ho-ho-hos.
Oh, nailed it. Look at that.
Yes!
That's the only one you're allowed.
Oh, God.
That is the kind of banter and jokage you can expect from this episode, people. If you didn't like that, turn it off now, because that's all you're getting. Gemma, what is our topic of conversation?
We're going to be talking about the top three most shocking movie moments.
We are, and that's going to be fascinating, because how do you quantify that? What constitutes a shock to one person might not be a shock to another. So this is going to be fantastic. I'm really especially looking forward to listening to the social media picks on that one.
Yeah, there's loads.
I think there's going to be a lot of ones where we go, oh, bloody hell, why didn't I put that one in?
Indeed, indeed. Mark, you picked it. What's the rewatch?
It is The Big Lebowski. Oh. Perfect one to drink to, I think.
Big time. Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. We're also going to be movie mass debating over Joaquin Phoenix, picking out his best performances. As well as all that, we'll be giving away another cracking prize, or multiple prizes, maybe?
I've got a sack full of prizes to give away. So I'm really
keeping with the theme.
Yeah, and wait to hear what we've got on this episode for me to unload the sack again. Ooh. There's loads.
Oh, grab a mop.
If there's one thing I know about you, Mark, it's that you've always got a sack full.
Always.
Always.
And today, I'm going to give it to you all.
And on that bombshell, let's get started.
The top three topic for this episode I chose last time, and I went for the top three most shocking movie moments. So it's a bit of a different one, and I think there's going to be some different interpretations. But how did you guys both find it?
Difficult. Because I didn't quite grasp. I should have stopped you on the last episode and asked you to justify it a bit more.
Never mind.
Shocking moments. I didn't know if it's the moment that I jumped out my seat and I was shocked.
Yeah.
Or shocked as in I didn't see that coming, and then suddenly it was a massive game changer, especially when we talked about The Usual Suspects and stuff like that. But I also didn't know if it was just, I completely guessed.
how about you, Ben? How'd you find it?
I think last week, or last episode rather, when you introduced this topic, Mark said he was going to do a similar thing, jaw droppers. Mm. And that's the way I looked at it. It's those things in cinema that happen and my jaw just went slack.
Yeah.
You know, I look like Kristen Stewart. Like, what has happened there?
Yeah,
that's what
I think I put it as what the fuck moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I think each of those points are valid. I think it could be whatever you interpret as shocking goes with the subject. So I'm kind of glad you both kind of looked at it a different way. So yeah,
good.
I think it's a good old topic. So on that note, I'm going to throw it to Ben first, actually. So first choice, please.
I'm going to go with a biggie.
Go on.
I'm going to make this pencil disappear.
Oh, yes!
Ta-da!
Love it!
Come on now. Heath Ledger was already owning it as the Joker in The Dark Knight at that point, but this was the thing that just put him over the top, that just went, you are the greatest Joker, the greatest interpretation on film, TV, whatever, of the Joker since day one. He balances that pencil on the table, says, I'm going to make this pencil disappear, grabs that lackey's head, pummels it into the pencil, and lo and behold, the pencil disappears. And then he tops it with that, ta-da! I was just like, what?
Yeah. And that's his entrance. That's
exactly.
Here I am.
Yeah. And what an entrance it is. You're sold on him then. You know who he is. You get this guy at that point. You think, this is a dangerous motherfucker.
And as well, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before, ever in films. And let alone, like, even like an urban legend, like if you sort of rest your head against a pencil and you fall asleep, it might go through your skull. I went to a British Forces school. We had different rules back there, but seeing that actually in the flesh, bloody hell.
So you're suggesting that you had rules akin to stabbing each other in the eye with a pencil?
Hey, times were tough back in the day.
In the British Forces schools.
That's right.
Crikey.
Dog eat dog.
The moment that was good about that is I saw on every website, magazine, everything saying, oh my God, why have they picked him? He's not right.
Yeah.
And within 30 seconds of that scene, not one person in the cinema was going to turn around and say, okay, I think Nolan's fucked up here. It was literally, that's the Joker. Mm-hmm. Done.
It's just perfect.
Absolutely unreal.
And I didn't go in with a negative idea of Heath Ledger because I, as you well know, have never seen 10 Things I Hate About You. So a lot of people thought of him as that guy and thought, how can he be the Joker? I didn't have that preconceived notion. So he was just an actor. And then I was like, he's not an actor. He's a god.
Had he been the gay cowboy at that point?
Yes, he did.
That was another thing that people were going off as well. So it's just because it's so different to anything he's done before. But good start.
Yeah. Great start.
What Dark Knight.
How do you follow that?
I'll give it a go. So for me, it's going to be The Thing.
Of course.
Sure.
Surprise, surprise.
But it's going to be the defibrillator scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's got to be because Dr. Cooper tries to save Norris. Now, this scene itself, for me, blew me away, and every time I watch it again, it still does. When I introduced friends to it, and I know when we did it on the rewatch, some of us had seen it, some of us hadn't. I don't think you had your Ben.
Not at that point, no.
The whole, when he's actually pumping, so literally Dr. Cooper's on his chest and pushes through, and the chest bursts open, a little bit like Alien, you know, that whole chest opening up. His hands are chopped off. You see those yellow kind of sort of silly string sort of stuff thrown away. It's the practical effects that really work.
Yeah.
The look on his face is unbelievable. MacReady jumps in with the flamethrower. The sound that you hear of him screaming, suddenly this monster comes out of his chest with the same face, which is iconic, which you see on all the posters, you see it on all the kind of top horror moments of all time. The head then jumps onto the floor. It turns into this spider with legs, which looks absolutely gruesome. Mm-hmm. Then MacReady's flame throwing the shit out of it to the extent where it's just fire everywhere. It runs off and it's...
Sounds like me.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. Big time.
That's Gemma laughing.
And it's just burning alive. And all you hear is that scream, that really horrific scream. Not just because of the shock factor, the special effects, the practical effects, the direction. For me, it's one of the most iconic horror scenes, but it's purely shocking. You never see that coming from him just literally trying to resuscitate him, and then it leads to that.
Who thinks he's going to lose arms from saving another life?
Incredible.
I'm with you 100%, but I just want to give Mark some props here for correctly pronouncing defibrillator.
Yeah, actually,
because
well
that's
done.
A hard word. I get that wrong sometimes.
Well done. Yes!
Anna said MacReady well, Anna said special effects okay, and the flamethrower, so I've done well there.
Gold star sticker your way.
I'm not going to last.
It is a genuinely great scene, and a shocker. Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah. And you're right to compare it to Alien. It's that same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, was this before all the body shock horror films of the 80s as well?
It's 82, so,
probably, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
it's close.
Yeah, because Cronenberg started doing his body horror kind of stuff later in the decade, I think.
And Pete Jackson with Braindead as well.
Exactly, so I kind of always see this as kind of one of the trendsetters.
Absolutely.
But it's also not just, like I said, the shocking, it's the best horror, it's the best use of special effects. Carpenter nailed it, and he always does.
I love that, Carpenter nailed it.
That's brilliant.
Yay!
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Don't edit that one out.
No,
Mark.
That's a good one. I like that. I didn't even mean for that either.
Well done.
Come on then, your topic, you need to set the bar high.
Yeah, all right then. How about Samuel L. Jackson gets eaten by a shark in deep blue sea?
Oh, nice.
Right? I mean, he was a big Hollywood name at this point. You know, he'd done Pulp Fiction, he did The Phantom Menace, Jackie Brown, Die Hard with a Vengeance. This was an A-list star. And the premise of the film, you know, sharks go a little bit mental when they're trying to research them for Alzheimer's.
Sorry, I'm just
laughing. That's on the DVD case.
The concept of that film is bullshit.
Ridiculous.
And so basically they're starting to get attacked by these super intelligent sharks. So Samuel L. Jackson's character Russell Franklin starts rallying the troops, goes, come on, we can do this, we can fight against them, we can. And then he gets eaten by a shark in a pool that's been somehow exposed within their like ship that they're in. And yeah, he's complete chum.
He's
shark bait. He's gone. It's the fact that he has this passion behind him that he's going to save the day, but now they're truly all on their own. They're screwed.
And is it LL Cool J that's in there just sort of looking on aghast?
Yeah, with his parrot, who gets eaten as well.
I think that was the start of his career. Not saying it's gone downhill, but the fact that he would then start doing the snakes on a plane and a lot of shite. Like, you just mentioned the lead-up to the films he was in.
Yeah.
That was, for me, a shocking moment that he's in this.
Yeah.
Do you know why I think Samuel L. Jackson rules? Is because you're right. He does a lot of awful B-movie or C-movie garbage akin to your Nicolas Cages and your Bruce Willis's. But because he's so beloved and so cool as hell, he still gets the A-list films as well. He does it all. He doesn't give a shit. He'll do whatever's, you know, whatever they pay him to do. Yeah. He'll turn up, but he's still got the stature and the cool factor that he still gets the big movies too, whereas Cage and Willis don't really get that anymore.
It's a really good point. They're not in anything big.
No.
They're straight to DVD or video or now and then a small part in something like Red 2 or something like that. They're not on those big, massive blockbusters where you got... Most recently, The Hateful Eight, and the main guy, finally, after all this time, Matey Boy.
Exactly. Wasn't a great film, but Jackson ruled in it. He owned the film. It was his movie, and he was great.
Yeah, it's because there was no sharks in it.
True.
We needed sharks.
More sharks.
Did you read this thing a couple of weeks ago? I saw it on the news that apparently there was some flight. I forget where it was. I think it was somewhere in South America. But somehow or some way, a load of snakes actually got released on a plane. And then the main news report on like the BBC was like, they needed Samuel L. Jackson.
Ridiculous.
Luckily, no one died.
Thank goodness.
What a classic. I actually saw that film at a film festival. I went to see Clerks 2 in Edinburgh, a film festival. First time I'd gone to a film festival.
Yeah.
And on the Sunday, we were waiting around and it said, no one knew about it. It was about 2 months before it was meant to come out, Snakes on a Plane. And we literally went, let's go and see this film because of the title.
Yeah.
That was it. Done.
And that's how it got the funding, wasn't it? It was just the title alone.
Yeah, it's the same as Hobo with a Shotgun.
Terrible.
If you've got a sweet title, you're done.
Mac and me. McDonald's were on board. That's the only way it came
the
about.
Cobbler.
Oh, God, the gobbler. Let's go round again. Ben?
Okay, I'm going with The Departed.
Yes.
A magnificent film. So, for those of you who don't know, in The Departed, Leonardo DiCaprio plays a guy who, as a youth, goes into the Boston Police Academy. And as he's working through the ranks, his bosses then decide to put him underground in the Irish-American Boston mob. On the other side of the equation, you have Matt Damon's character, who is born into a mob family, but what they get him to do is go into the police academy to be a kind of mole on that side of the equation. DiCaprio eventually manages to prove or capture the fact that Damon is this double agent, as it were, and they're on a rooftop. One of Damon's fellow police officers comes onto the roof, and DiCaprio manages to persuade him, no, he's a mole, I'm a cop, believe me, I'm not in the mob, blah, blah, blah. And you think, wow, it's ended. He manages to persuade this other cop, okay, we've got him. The film is about to end. They then get into a lift to go back to the lower floor of the building. The lift doors open. Another cop appears. Bang! Shoots DiCaprio in the head.
It doesn't get much more shocking.
And it's like, what the effing F have I just seen? Because, you know, you're thinking that's the end of the film. You're thinking what's going to happen is DiCaprio is going to frog march Damon into the police station and go, I'm not in the mob at all. I'm really an undercover cop and he's in the mob. Yay! Everyone applauds. End of film. The credits roll. But no, DiCaprio, boom, shot in the damn face. And the guy who shoots him is another cop who then says to Damon's character, you weren't the only mole in the police force. Mm-hmm. I was too. You know, because Frank Costello, played by Jack Nicholson, had planted a second mole that Damon didn't know about. And it's just, it's a brilliant story. And of course, we know it wasn't an original story. Mm-hmm. Infernal Affairs was the original version. But it's still shocking. I hadn't seen Infernal Affairs at this point, so I saw it afterwards. So it was a massive, massive shock to me.
I've not seen The Departed, so cheers for that, mate.
Yes, you have. But I should have said spoiler alert before all that. So
people know nowadays.
Come on, if you haven't seen The Departed, who are you? Yeah.
Do you know what you were just talking about then took me back to the very first time I saw it. And it was one of those nice occasions where I hadn't gone online. No one had spoiled it for me.
Yeah.
I didn't see it at the cinema. I didn't. Yeah. I think I got it when it first came out on DVD and I was like, it's Scorsese, this mm-hmm. is good, I'm going to watch this. Just took me exactly back to that scene because it just literally, it just blew my mind. I was just sat there like, what?
Yeah. Blew DiCaprio's mind as well, right in the back of his skull.
We saw it too.
But yeah, that's exactly it. And it really did just, when you were just describing it and that bang,
yeah,
that was what happened. My heart was like, what? What? Because you could have just turned it off. It's, it's back to where, no, here we go.
If memory serves, I haven't watched it in a year or two, but if memory serves, there's kind of a ping when the doors open.
Yes.
It's like, ping, bang.
So good. So good.
I'm pleased with that choice.
How do I top this? I'm going with American History X, the curb stomp.
Oh, mate.
Oh.
Now, the reason I'm choosing this is because it shocked me to the bone. Mm-hmm. Now, this is on a whole new level. I hadn't seen anything like this in film. I grew up watching a lot of films. I had favourites I loved. I loved action. I loved sci-fi. But this came along as a raw, gritty, thrilling drama that just... The acting itself from Edward Norton blew my mind for the whole film. Mm-hmm. I love Edward Furlong in this as well. He gives a performance that I think is as good as Norton. They're fantastic, both of them. But this moment, no one saw coming. It wasn't this spoiler. This curb stomp scene, for me,
horrible.
Just still sticks with me now. Mm. And even every time I hear it, the sound of those teeth against that curb is horrendous. But to set a kind of picture in people's head, if you haven't seen it, he's a racist. That's pretty much fair to say. He's one of those. He's got the swastika on his actual chest tattooed, and he's proud that he's against black people.
Yeah.
Now, in this,
and Jews, don't forget that.
And Jews and every other race apart from his English or American white man.
Yeah.
Now, at this scene, he's being broken into, and he takes matters into his own hands. His brother lets him know he's being broken into. Wait here. I'll sort this. Goes outside, kicks the shit out of this guy. It's a black gentleman. He's literally kicking him while he's in the middle of the road and says, come here, bitch, you know, pulls his hair, says, bite the curb. And you can just see him saying, like, no. You see the teeth on the edge of the curb, and that scrape sound, I'm sure, is the actual sound that you hear if you did scrape your teeth on a curb. It's not like a production afterwards where they tried to recreate the sound. It sounds like that tooth is, oh, it's horrendous. The next thing we see is, good night. His foot goes through the back of his head and literally game over. Why are you laughing, guys? This is not a scene. Is it the black gentleman comment?
It's black gentleman.
He's a black gentleman.
He was a black gentleman, that's true. Yes. It's just the use of the word gentleman. I don't think I've ever heard you use that word before.
Black gentleman. But yes, and then the worst part is the police are turning up at this point.
Yeah.
His brother's there, his mom's come out, what have you done? His stepdad's there, his sister, everything's going mad. The neighbours are running out to see what's happened. He puts his hands up to surrender, turns around, and that grin and look on his face, that is as good as anything. And he's so proud and happy with what he's done that he's victorious and he overcome this black gentleman. But it really is, that look is just, and the tattoo is showing, and he's not even fazed in any way. Yeah. All he thinks is, I was victorious.
Yeah.
Disturbing. It is. So disturbing.
It's brutal. And as someone who actually lost their tooth on a curb once, I can attest that noise is very real. Admittedly, there wasn't a racist foot on my head at the time. I was chasing a Scouser down the road and fell over. The situation was very different.
And it wasn't me kicking Ben. But yeah, that scene will stay with people for years. And for me, it shocked me. And still shocks me now.
It's brutal. I remember I used to live in Birmingham. I lived in a house with 11 other people. And what we used to do for Sunday night is we used to get together and watch a movie. And the house is a pretty even split of lads and girls. And generally speaking, of an evening, it'd be something light and fluffy like a rom-com we'd watch. We'd watch shit like You've Got Mail or whatever. But generally speaking, the girls would pick a film one week, the lads would pick a film another week. And me and my friend Mark picked the film. Not you, Mark, a better one.
What? He's the Mark 1 version.
brilliant. So this one Sunday, we picked American History X, and the girls we live with had never seen it and weren't aware what it was about. And it was not the light, fluffy Sunday evening viewing they were expecting. Like, they were traumatised.
They were probably thinking, when's Richard Gere going to turn up? Yeah. Is he going to lift her up in a dance?
It's also, nope. It's also the moment they raid the store as well, when they're pinning down the black woman that works on the counter and pouring white milk all over her, and she's choking and... She's actually wet herself because she's so... The whole film has got those iconic scenes. Even the basketball scene, everything is shocking. They know how to really create the suspense.
Yeah.
And the worst part is, even though I've watched this and I'm shocked and I think the director's nailed it, he hated it. He hated the cut. He wanted his name taken off it. He didn't want anything to do with it. So it always makes me wonder. I know we'll never get it, like we do with Donnie Darko and other films. Yeah. I want to see that cut he intended for us to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tony Kaye was furious with it. The studio fucked it. I mean, it turned out to be a great film. So it's not as if we've ended up with a piece of shit.
Yeah.
His cut might not have been very good. We don't know. But I don't. He's barely worked again since.
I'm so curious, though. It's annoying. Yeah. It's almost like, I just want to see it.
Yeah,
it was the grittiness, the fact it was shot in black and white. And
oh, it looks so good in black and white.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, if that was all in colour, we're disturbed just watching particular scenes, especially that one. What would it have been like if it was all in colour?
Well, that was good, wasn't it? Like, the black and white was for the basketball game. That's all done in black and white. When it's the winner gets to keep the court, white versus black, and the shop is all black and white. Really sticks with you so well.
Yeah, it's all. Is it all the flashback scenes that are in black?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Come on, Jam.
Oh, God, how am I going to top that one? Okay, so I'm going to go to 1998, and I'm going to go for a Japanese film called Ringu. It is when we see Samara come out of the television.
Yeah.
And that noise.
No, yeah. Oh, is that The Grudge?
Oh, no. Yes.
She doesn't say Shut a lot. Up. She's more of a mute. So, of course, the original is much better than the remake because the remake is digitized and has so many special effects. What made this even more shocking is just the fact that it looked so authentic and so real. So the premise of Ringu, for those who have not seen it, you watch a dodgy tape, no, not that kind of dodgy tape, just, you know, a tape, unmarked. 7 days later, you die. That's the film, really. That's the film. This chap, this ex-husband of the main heroine, he goes and watches the tape against her wishes and he thinks he's got it all hunky-dory. They think they've got the solution sorted. Then he pops on his telly and there's a picture of a well in a sort of a grainy kind of textured look to it. Then Samara, the ghost that's been sort of haunting them throughout the film, comes out of the well and starts walking towards the TV screen. And then she climbs out of the TV screen.
It's literally terrifying.
Holy hell. And it is the scariest thing because you always think if you watch a horror film or something really disturbing or scary, you know you're protected. You know that screen's there to protect you. Nothing's going to come out. Try watching this tape and then say the same thing. Mm. It is utterly shocking. I could not believe what I saw because I watched this film not knowing what was going to happen at the end as well. And my heart was in my mouth. I couldn't believe what I was just watching. On the DVD, they did have the footage of the tape that the characters watched, and I refused to watch it because I thought Samara was going to come out of my little 14-inch LCD TV. Absolutely shocking.
The thing I liked about it is the way she moved. It wasn't fluid movements. It was kind of herky, jerky.
Was it filmed backwards?
I think it may have been. That would make sense, actually. That would explain why she moves like that.
It's otherworldly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really
otherworldly. Which suits the character perfectly.
What's that wrestler that comes out on the floor, does all that move?
The Boogeyman.
He reminds me of the Boogeyman. He does, though. Think about the way they move. It's like the Boogeyman, isn't it? I reckon exactly that's what I reckon they set it on.
There we go.
I'm telling you now, think of the arm movements and the look. That's the Boogeyman.
Ring Boogeyman.
WWE will remake that film in a few years and they'll get him in it. I'm telling you now. I'll buy it.
There is a follow-up film next year called Rings, but it's just pretty much a rip-off of what all the other Ring films have been.
When you say follow-up, do you mean a Japanese follow-up or an American one?
I'm afraid it's American.
Shame.
Although, there is a Japanese film, Samara versus the Girl from The Grudge.
Nice.
Is that the name of the film? Because that's not really snappy, but I like it.
I can't remember the name. The Girl
from The Grudge. Samara versus the Girl from The Grudge. In cinemas.
No, straight to Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, rolls off the tongue.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that choice. Very nice. And yeah, the movie. I think there is a bit of a sound. I'm sure I know The Grudge is there.
Yeah.
I think there is a sound as well that made me shit myself a little bit with that. Last time round.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the horror as well.
Yeesh.
Which in itself is shocking because, you know, I don't watch horrors very often. I think the first Saw film is a genuinely great film.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
And I think people forget that because of the god-awful sequels. How many have there been now? Seven, and there's another one coming?
Must be,
something like that.
Seven, eight, yeah.
Yeah. But the first one was genuinely great. All ends up. There's so many good things in it. But the best thing in it, the big jaw dropper, the shocker, is that this guy, Jigsaw, who has been punishing these two dudes, have been chained up in this bathroom all this time. It turns out the dead body that was on the floor of that bathroom for the whole running time of the film was Jigsaw. And at the last minute, you see him sort of get up off the floor and you realise, fuck me, he was in the room the whole time. I was like, I've never seen anything like that before. I thought that was so ballsy. And it just worked perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
I can't believe you've seen that film. Actually, I'm quite surprised.
Yeah, I saw at the cinema. That's right, saying that when you're drunk.
I was about to say, where was it? Can you remember the first time you saw that film? Do you know what? And I don't care what anyone says. No one saw that coming. If you've got that mate in the cinema, turned around and said, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Yeah. They're a liar.
They're a bullshit.
Absolute wanker. Yeah. I'm telling you now, there's no one I've ever met that will... Like, some people say The Sixth Sense, they worked out. And I can probably see it because it gets set up. There's no point in that film that you ever think, oh, that body's going to move at the end and tell you that it's all him.
No.
And incredible.
The thing is, with the whole twist ending thing, you can kind of go one or two ways and it may or may not work. Like you say, with The Sixth Sense, it was built. There were signals there. So people who got it, I understand that. I didn't. I was completely surprised by The Sixth Sense ending.
Exactly the same.
But I understand those people who got it because the seeds were planted. Mm-hmm. There are other films where they don't plant seeds and then there's a twist and it seems to have come out of nowhere and it's unsatisfying. Saw wasn't that. There weren't any seeds. It seemed to come out of nowhere, but it made perfect sense. It didn't defy logic. It was like, okay, that works and I love it. And my mind is blown.
Amazing.
Yeah. I remember the end, watching that at the cinema, and as soon as the lights went up, everybody looked like they'd just seen a ghost. They couldn't believe what they'd just seen.
Yeah.
You'll like to know that my last choice is also a horror.
Hey. Nice.
This is going to be Stephen King's The Mist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
yes.
going purely for the very final end scene of this movie. There is. Have you both seen it?
Yes.
No, I haven't, but we have talked about it extensively on
so
this
it's
film.
Okay.
So I feel like I've seen
it's
it.
Good.
I know how it ends.
So Thomas Jane plays a character called David Drayton, who's a family man. He's been avoiding this mist and this monster that's been attacking the village and the town. All of the residents of the city have either been killed or are stuck in a supermarket avoiding this whole monster. It gets to near the end where he breaks away with his family and drives off. We think this is what has he got to get is out of this whole threat and danger. He gets to the point where he knows the monsters are going to get him whatever happens. So he makes the choice to shoot his wife in the head right in front of you. He turns around and kills his daughter and son. They're dead, deader than you could ever imagine. And he's even planning in his head. He's like, wife saying, you do me first, then the kids and all this. It's mental. Absolutely horrific. It sounds weird that do me first, then the kids. But I can't make an inappropriate comment about Ian Watkins there. But what I'm going to say is he then literally goes to shoot himself, but hears this siren going off, gets out of the car, looks around, and it's the army that have come to save the day.
Yeah.
And... Mm-hmm. It's do you get much more bleak than that?
It's the cry at the end.
Yeah. It's Ben, I wish you'd seen this because
you ruined it for me. What's the point?
But to visualize it, and I'm sure you can see that's harrowing and shocking.
Oh, big time, yeah.
But the way it's acted and the budget for this film is really good. A lot of Stephen King films don't get it, but Frank Depotant is the man behind this. That's an old reference to the listeners there.
That is an old school throwback to about 18 months ago when Mark mispronounced Darabont.
Hopefully some of the fans are still listening to us from back then. And at this moment, he is literally, his life's gone, hasn't it? His most... prized possessions, his wife and kids are dead. He's the man behind the bullet. Shocking. And he's saved. And is he saved? Not really, because he's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. He'd probably just shoot himself if I was him and think, sod it, I've just killed everything that mattered to me. But that left me feeling shocked, sick, upset, distraught, because I was so invested in the characters throughout the whole film. The kids he's always protect, the wife he's always protect, and in the end, he's the one to blame for them all anyway dying. So... that's a nice happy ending for everyone.
And,
there you go.
And the thing that's great about that is that's not how the book ends, is it?
No.
He doesn't do that in the book. And Stephen King has kind of a love-hate relationship with the films that have been made from his books.
Yeah.
You know, famously, he doesn't like The Shining.
No.
He thought the piss-poor TV version of The Shining they did a few years later was better. And he's wrong. He's objectively wrong about that. But he loves the ending of The Mist. He I think he was even on record as saying, you know, I kind of wish I'd written it that way because it's better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not often that he likes any of his big budget films either. Like, he likes stuff like Firestarter and The Stand, the original Stand, which is made for about £6 and a Mars bar. It's dog shit. But he loves that. He loves that. He hates, you know, Shawshank and stuff wouldn't be right for him. He doesn't want that. You know, Misery's probably okay, but Yeah, it's done well. And if you haven't seen it, I know I've ruined it, but watch it because it's a very well-made film.
It's fantastic. And there's like half of the cast of The Walking Dead in there as well.
Yeah, everyone from The Walking Dead is involved in this film.
It's Darabont, isn't it? Darabont brought them all over when he started The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Come on then, finish it off.
Okay. That's what she said. Okay,
it's
so...
Shocking.
Which I hate.
Inappropriate.
So I'm actually going to end this on a bit of a funny one, actually. And the reason why it is in my top three, the first time I saw this at the cinema, and I could not believe what I was seeing in front of me. My last choice is Ben Stiller versus his zipper.
Oh, yeah.
There's something about Mary. Could not believe it. So, yeah, just to kind of take you back to that lovely memory. He's taking the girl of his dreams, Mary, to the prom and met her parents. And he's going upstairs to the bathroom to just freshen up a little bit. So he looks wistfully outside and sees a few bluebirds. And, he's just seen her in her underwear. Oh dear, game changer. So he kind of tries to pull himself together, pulls up his zip, and, the peen is still in the zip. Ow!
It's that moment the camera goes straight to it and you see the balls and the shaft and the bell end.
The Frank and Beans.
The Frank and Beans.
Frank and Beans!
It is disgusting. Yeah. And every lad has had that worry of... Yeah, trust me, whenever you've gone to the toilet or you've ever been drunk after seeing that film, you know it could happen.
Yeah.
It looked like a meat bubble.
Oh, fuck, man.
Jesus.
It did. You're right, though.
That's exactly
there's
it.
There's no
I feel unwell.
But like every lad worries about that.
Yeah.
Mr. Jingles has been to the hairdressers. The shaven mouse. But yeah, it's gross.
I could not believe I saw that because it was just, I think it was the height of the Farrelly brothers as well. They were known for kind of gross out comedies and this took it to a whole new level. I think obviously that the very famous hair gel scene, you know, it's shocking, but you kind of, you have that image of, okay, she's just put spunk in her hair, fair dues. But you see this, you see the Frank above the beans or you see the beans above the Frank, whatever, I don't know.
Can we try and not be so degrading? Because you're being revolting. I like to say man juice, not spunk.
Yeah, or baby gravy. Don't say spunk.
Yeah, come on.
I was going to say, this is from the same guy who said, what, jizz mopper a few episodes ago? And I can't say spunk.
Okay, we'll have one spunk on this episode. That's it.
So, one spunk per episode, please.
So I'm now vetoed of all spunk.
No more spunk jam.
Brilliant.
That's it.
Okie dokie.
All out of spunk.
There we go.
Well, that's a nice one to finish on.
Thank you.
And Ben did say he was really looking forward to the social media, I believe.
Yeah. Indeed.
So let's see what they've got.
Shall we? Okay, so Helen Lindsay got in touch. She said 7 with head in a box.
Ooh. Yeah.
Thelma and Louise for driving off a cliff at the end. And then we've got Misery for whacking off the ankles.
Oh, Christ, that is horrendous. The sound and the... She uses like a hammer, doesn't she?
She does, like a sledgehammer.
Oh, yeah. Fuck me, that's horrible.
Yep. It's a two-handed job there.
And we're gonna talk about Kathy Bates in more detail later on.
Stick around. Gavin Herbert said The Shining, all work makes Jack a dull boy.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Alien, the exploding chest scene.
Incredible.
Ooh. And then we got Pulp Fiction with the adrenaline shot to Mia.
Great one.
Oh, dear. Then we've got Declan Hayes got in touch and said Bone Tomahawk, the splicing scene.
That's incredible.
Bone Tomahawk is one of the best films I've seen in the last 2 or 3 years.
It is.
And it is
fucking horrendous.
Then Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, the revenge scene. That's the tattooing the rapist.
Yes.
I would imagine.
Oh, that's ruined not it for nice. Me because I've there not seen the film or read the book. So cheers.
But who's the rapist? Then we got Passion of the Christ with the flogging scene. That's a very uncomfortable scene.
Well, if you read the Bible, it wasn't that much of a shock.
Stephen Young also got in touch. Sloth in 7.
Brilliant one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We got Serenity with Wash's death.
Yes.
Yeah?
No one saw that coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then this one, definitely, Casino, Joe Pesci's burial.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
When he does the voiceover and then it just cuts off with the bat to the head.
Oh. Oh.
I feel that we've now ruined about 14 movies.
Sorry, guys. And then our last one, Cal at cal_lewis.brown. Shutter Island, the end scene.
Yes.
So the
that's
reveal.
A really, really good twist.
Which I shall not go into.
Keep it vague.
There we
nice.
Go. Keep it vague. Oh, God, and a second choice, the ending of Fight Club. And I've kept that vague because I've actually got the ending here. Yeah. And the end of Kill List.
Oh, that's harrowing.
I've not seen Kill List.
Really, really good, well-made British film. Fantastic.
Excellent. So, yeah, for the next topic, keep them coming, and we'd like to read them out.
Oh, it's me, isn't it?
Here we go.
It feels like ages since you've announced the topic. I know it's only two episodes, but it does feel like forever.
Yeah. Remember the three-week gap.
Oh, that's what it was.
To be honest, before I make my announcement, I want to ask you a question. War.
Huh?
What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Except a damn good topic. Oh! Top three war movies, baby!
Hello!
Cooking and the children upstairs asleep. It's time for old Santa Claus to make his midnight cream call.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Yeah, now
Santa Claus wants some loving.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Bad Santa 2, the sequel to, I assume, Bad Santa. It stars Billy Bob Thornton and Kathy Bates and Tony Cox, most of the returning cast and a few newbies of the previous Bad Santa. Our hero here in this, Willie, has hit on bad times again, as he always does. He's on the verge of suicide, but he gets roped back in by his old partner, the little dwarf fella, played by Tony Cox, to perform a $2 million heist on a charity. It turns out that his mother, played by Kathy Bates, is also in on it, and it's about the shenanigans they get through and whether or not they pull off the heist.
So well done. Off the cuff like that. I spend weeks and weeks planning mine and sound like a pleb.
Just blag it, mate.
Let's have some more. Next round of drinks.
Oh, is it?
Let's join in.
Is it drink o'clock? Lovely stuff.
So, Bad Santa 2. Where do we start with this one?
Right. Well, I'm going to go to you first, Mark, because we did the original Bad Santa as a rewatch not that long ago. Was it? It probably was last Christmas or there or thereabouts.
You guys did it last Christmas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we bigged it up. We are big fans of this. So what are your thoughts? Did the sequel live up to expectations? Did it live up to the standard set by the first?
So I've been thinking about this. Mm-hmm. Usually we record straight away after seeing the film.
Yeah.
Little spoiler for the fans out there and inside the back of the scenes, you know. It's been a couple of days, so I've had some really good time to think about it. This wasn't a film that needed that, to be fair.
No.
I wish Hell or High Water and stuff like that had that. But no, this is the one where we choose to actually digest the film.
Yeah.
For me, I enjoyed it thoroughly as a sequel, and I found it funny. But what I've been thinking about the last few days is it needed, right? Is a sequel needed?
Yeah.
No, it fucking isn't. It really isn't needed. Just like Dumb and Dumber 2, it's in that territory. If it's been too long,
exactly right.
I didn't need this sequel, but Dumb and Dumber 2 annoyed me, frustrated me, and actually made me pissed off because I felt those characters in the first film were iconic. Dumb and Dumber is up there as one of the best comedies. It is. I'm not being stupid there. It is iconic.
I'm with you.
Bad Santa isn't. Bad Santa's a really good cult Christmas silly film. So it doesn't offend me as much, but this film was never needed. And I am at the point where I'm like, why did they do this?
Yeah.
Why? But it didn't offend me. So I was quite pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed a film with you two. But I am going to be honest with you, it wasn't great.
Okay, Gemma, thoughts?
The Coen brothers had a credit on the producers for the first film, and they were missed on this one. Mm. It was, you know, it was okay. There was a few laughs, but was it a gut-busting LOL? Not really. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was something missing about the film, because the first film, it is hilarious. And there's actually, with a little bit of a Coen influence, there was little subtleties that made this film made the original really, really good. Like Bernie Mac's character.
Oh, he was,
clearly constipated because he had little indicators suggesting he was using like stool softeners or eating oranges to like alleviate constipation. But there was no little subtleties about this film. It was very much, and here's the punchline, and here's the joke, and here's the offensive word.
That was it. Yeah. Here's the swearing.
Yeah, and I think it was trying to, it almost made it out like a bit of an outdo each other with the most offensive insult point with especially Kathy Bates and Billy Bob Thornton. So
I thought it was dog shit. I was so thoroughly disappointed. And the thing that made it worse for me is that I thought the opening scene was fantastic. So you see Billy Bob's character. He is in a supermarket and he's stealing booze off the racks. He goes back to his piece of shit apartment and he tries to kill himself. He sticks his head in the oven, but it's an electric oven, so obviously it doesn't work. He then decides to string himself up to his light fixture. As he's dangling there using a toaster cord, old Thurman Merman comes in. And we'll talk about Thurman in a little bit. But it doesn't work, he collapses and he survives. That first 5-10 minutes of the film are genuinely hilarious. It's shocking, it's bleak and it's funny. And I'm thinking, okay, they've replicated the first one. We're on for something good here. And it just goes downhill from there. It's just scatological bullshit after that. It's just I swear like a docker, I can't blame anyone else for doing it. But it's just effing and jeffing for the sake of it. The jokes aren't well crafted. It's just crude and rude and... It's what it seems to me. The word that came to mind when I was watching it is desperate. There's this awe of sweaty desperation about this film that they're trying so hard to make it as good and as funny and as crude as the first one without any of the wit or intelligence. It was shit.
I'm trying to pick the word. It's just lost the magic that the first one had. Yes. Because the magic was, it was original. This film came, Billy Bob Thornton is one of the greatest actors for the last 20 years for his iconic roles. When you watch him in Fargo, the TV series, he's outstanding. Yeah. You know, in the original Bad Santa, you could not get a better cast kind of pisshead. He's perfect, isn't he? As the drunken fool. And it was so original. It came from nowhere, this really good humour. You could have put anyone in that role, but for me, he stood out. To get him back is exactly the same character. The midget was exactly the same.
Little person.
Throughout. He was, though, exactly the same. We'll talk about the story, but it's the same premise. He even does the same twist at the end where he's still the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yes, I like Kathy Bates, actually, in this. It was quite funny because she's quite serious in a lot of her roles and she's been doing a lot of TV and stuff. So to see her this extreme and really filthy and really kind of potty-mouthed was quite refreshing to see and she did it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was shit. And there was moments where... It is, Ben, exactly. It was desperate and really trying to recreate that joke again that was funny 10 years ago. And it felt cheaper as well. It felt like the budget wasn't there.
Absolutely right. It felt and looked cheaper. So the guy who directed it is a chap called Mark Walters, who also directed Mean Girls and Freaky Friday. So, you know, he's not a bad director per se, but this film looked kind of cheap TV-level direction, whereas the original was directed by Terry Zwigoff, and he made it have this really sort of dark, gritty aesthetic, and it fitted the dark, gritty characterization of it. It felt... I don't know how to put this, but it felt really melancholy, the first one, as sweary and as brutal as it was, it had this melancholy and it made you feel for the main character, whereas this didn't. This felt just like a bad comedy you're watching on TV. You're not supposed to care about any of these people. It's just something that's happening for 90 minutes and then it's over. The direction made me feel nothing.
Even at the first film, at the very end, when he does go back for the pink elephant for Thurman, you get that glint of hope about it. And it's only just a very small split second where you get that empathy for his character. Whereas the ending of this film, it was too much schmaltz involved. Yeah, yeah. And I didn't feel that it was Willie's character. Willie should not feel that much empathy or emotion towards another person.
Yeah, the ending wasn't earned. It didn't feel fully earned. It felt tacked on.
Yeah,
exactly that. Now, I hadn't seen a trailer for this film. Because, to be honest, we can say this now. When we went to see this, there's one showing, and it's the first week it's been out.
Yeah.
This will be pulled in a couple of weeks, because no one I know's really seen this film, and no one's going to see it. And it feels like 2 weeks too early. Like, bring it out closer to Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, what people in their mind would do anything Christmassy this before Christmas? You know, like,
enjoy the Christmas special, guys.
But what was really... I just couldn't believe this, and you guys were like, you didn't know that? But I didn't know that Christina Hendricks was in this film. I didn't know.
Neither did I.
Nope. Yeah.
Brilliant. Nope. At least I'm not just the Dumbo again. No. But I couldn't believe it when she showed up, because I see her as the girl from Mad Men.
Yeah.
The very serious, classy, elegant woman. And to see her again, basically really being filthy, and, you know, it's not a spoiler, this film has a lot of dirty sex, and she's a bit of a nympho, and she's getting revenge on her husband that she doesn't really have sex with anymore. So she's basically taking it in the street up a bin from Bad Santa and being filthy.
Is up a bin a euphemism?
Taking the garbage out.
If you took the garbage out, I would have done it. But I couldn't believe that she'd done this because she doesn't really feel like she needs to do that for me. I don't see this part. I see that as a part for someone like, what are they called, those girls? Melissa McCarthy.
What?
Or
those girls called?
It's going to go.
Yeah, but, see, I
but
disagree.
Do you know what I mean?
I take your point, but I disagree with saying the Ghostbusters girls, because all the women in Ghostbusters are genuinely good comedic actresses who deserve better. Yeah. This should have been some no-name nobody. It shouldn't have been Christina Hendricks, who is marvelous as Joan in Mad Men and was nominated for many Emmys and Golden Globes and stuff like that. She is also a favourite actress of Nicholas Winding Refn, whose name I always mispronounce, but he's in several of her films, I think. She's brilliant, and she should be should be an A-lister for me because
it ruined my illusion.
Yeah, because she's brilliant, and she was classic. Utterly wasted in this.
Yeah.
She was a girl getting shagged up the bins, like Mark said, rather than displaying her considerable talents. Yeah. I thought the producers let her down here.
Oh, her talents were on display.
Oh, yeah, she's got a couple of big old talents.
Do you know what I do there? I will say this now, and it's not degrading. It's like, she is very elegant and a very beautiful, incredible woman. And I loved her in Mad Men, and I actually fell in love with her. I'll admit
Oh, big time.
She's my wife wouldn't mind me saying that. She is absolutely stunning. She's not a slutty whore.
Mm-mm.
But in this, she was, and it was a bit annoying, really. Yeah. It was just kind of like, that was a fantasy of you being taken by some bins. I didn't want to see it.
Well, hang on.
I wanted to keep that in my head. Why has everyone else got to enjoy my fantasies? But one thing I do want to talk about, and Ben literally just mentioned him, the Ferminator. Ferman Merman. Do you know what, right? I kind of, in a weird way, and it's a major stupid thing to say, but this film didn't need him in the way that he was an adult. He talks like an adult. He looks like an adult. Yeah. He should never have grown up.
Mm-hmm. You know what?
CGI the fucker and make him look like midget because he shouldn't.
Little person,
it's true.
Dwarf.
It's true, though, isn't
Either
it?
One of those is
he should never have grown up. So hearing him with an adult voice, really trying too hard to make him the Furman that we saw as an innocent child in the first film, it didn't work. And he was still, as an adult, he would have progressed a little bit. Even if he's not mentally stable and he's got issues, he still wouldn't be as dumb as they made him in this film.
And this is exactly it. And I think you just used the word innocent. In the first film, he was an innocent, naive kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand how he is and you understand why that relationship forms between him and Willy. In this film, he's just a fucking idiot. He's just a 22-year-old who doesn't understand the world or anything or why a person should wear a coat in the middle of winter in Chicago. He's a fucking moron.
Yes.
And it doesn't make any sense. And you can't kind of warm to him or understand him, whereas you could as a little fat kid.
Yes.
That's literally the notes I have. Like, it works when you're a kid, but not necessarily when you're an adult grown up. I mean, the whole scene about him attempting to lose his virginity to, may I add, an Oscar winner, Octavia Spencer.
Yeah.
It says it all, really, doesn't it? What did she have to think in order to get a role like this? She must be riding high, surely.
The only reason why it didn't anger me beyond belief that Oscar winner Octavia Spencer played a prostitute in a 3-minute scene is the fact that she was in the first Bad Center. So she was reprising her role. So I was kind of like, oh, fair enough. But I still think you should have said no. Get a better agent and say no.
Surely she's getting the bunts somewhere.
You would hope so.
Tara Reid would have done a better role.
It would have been like,
big time.
Tara Reid could have been like Joan from Mad Men's character, or Octavia Spencer's character. She could have been Ferman Merman, for Christ's sake.
Ferma Sperman. Stick around for more of her on the rewatch coming up. But he also got on the bus and said, can you take me to Chicago? It's ridiculous. A kid, an adult, anyone would have the sense to know a bus will not drive you that far. It's stupid. Yeah. And he got there. How did he get there?
Also, not only that
plot
as well,
holes.
Because we know that, obviously, with Thurman and Willie's relationship, you would have thought Willie would have sort of like got it into his head and go, look, this is the way the world works. I'm not Santa, rada. Why? I mean, how?
The suspension of disbelief, and then there's just bullshit plot holes that are nonsense and you just can't agree with. The thing that pissed me off as well, not pissed me off, but the thing that I noticed in this film is that other than the main characters, so our two main returnees from the first film and the couple of newbies, they were absolutely fine, but the rest of the supporting cast was absolute shite. So there was a security guard at this charity that Willy and the gang were robbing, a character named Gina, played by Jenny Zigarino, arguably the worst actress I've seen in a Hollywood movie in a decade.
Ever.
What, even worse than Rebel Wilson?
Well, I dislike Rebel Wilson, but she's not a bad actress.
Oh.
I just dislike her as a person.
Oh, okay, fair enough. That's okay. I just wanted to double check.
But this actress here, how awful was she? She couldn't deliver a line to save her life.
And she's trying to seduce the
Marcus. Little person.
Marcus.
Little,
yes.
Yeah, he's got
Marcus.
A name.
His name is Marcus.
Mm-hmm. Or Mark for short. See what I did there. But yeah, but
it took me a minute to get that.
There we go.
But she's just trying to be sexy and a bit of a kind of a office slag again because she'd been putting it about. She had. She shagged Santa. She shagged one of the guys that walked past. Or I'll see you later and all this. And she was dreadful. Like, even in a silly, crappy comedy that no one's going to go and see, that no one wants this, she still didn't perform. Yeah. And that's bad.
She stunk up the room. Yeah. She was atrocious. She
passed around like an unwanted hors d'oeuvre.
What are you talking about?
She's bad. No one wants that.
But everyone in it, even the jolly Santa that he was going up against, so over the top, so full on, who was in the doorway, they're basically trying to steal the patch, who was the best place to earn money.
Yeah.
This complete douchebag actor again, over the top, crap, didn't like him.
See, Gemma and I are looking at each other the same way, and I'm going to let Gemma say it.
It's the chap from Dumb and Dumber, isn't it?
It is. It's the chap. It's the chap that they accidentally kill in the diner.
With the ulcer.
Yeah. Oh, okay, nice.
Yes.
That iconic performance that stuck with me that much,
I
forgot.
Right. There we go.
But everyone, you know, dreadful. Just really, really poor. And it just felt to me like, but to be fair, you just said then, the two main guys were great. Billy Bob Thornton did a very good job.
He was brilliant.
Yeah. He was the man that was in the first film, so you can't fault him. He made me laugh. And Ben said then, when we first walked into the cinema and sat down, all of us were wetting ourselves for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes! A sequel that's worthy! This is going to be amazing! Look at us. This is the first time we slagged a film off in a long time as a main review. Mm-hmm. We've been on a good run. We have. We've had Arrival. We've had some really good Hello High Water. Good classics. Nines, tens, eights.
Yeah, it might be Ghostbusters the last time we rented a film.
And that's about 6 months ago.
It was about 2 months ago.
But it feels like a long time since we've really ripped into something.
Yeah. Mm. Shall we score it? Or has anyone got anything else to say?
No, I'm done.
Are we spent?
I'm spent.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to go first on this one and give it a 3 out of 10.
Wow.
Ooh.
It's low, but it doesn't deserve to be any higher. I mean, 3 out of 10, still not bad. It's not a duck egg. It's not one or two. It's pretty low.
But shocking.
No, because 5 is average, bang in the middle. And this wasn't an average film. It's below average. If it had been average, it would have been like, it was all right, 5 out of 10. Yeah. So it's below. So 4 would have been okay. Maybe after time it might do, but no, 3.
I disagree. I think it's bang average, so I'm going to give it 5. It didn't need to exist at all, like you talked about at the start, Mark. And it's not as good as the first one, etc., etc. But Billy Bob is brilliant. He owns that character. He is Willy. He is Bad Santa, and he's great. The relationship between him and Tony Cox is superb. The relationship between him and Kathy Bates and his mother is superb. So all those individual elements I enjoyed, it just didn't coalesce as a whole. So I'm happy to give it 5, but
actually, Kathy Bates was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you going to change the score now?
4.
There we go.
Yes, because Kathy Bates was good. I can't. She was amazing.
Yeah, she
made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with Ben. It's a 5 as well for me. There is still that glimmer of hope in Billy Bob Thornton, and it would be refreshing to see him in more roles as well. It did remind me why I like him so much, but it's just a shame that he had a bit of a poor vehicle. But it is bang average. It's not great. It's not bad. Had a few laughs, so it's a 5 for me.
So overall, Bad Santa, 5 out of 10.
It's prize giveaway time. I'm sticking with prize giveaway now, not competition. That was so last phase, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what it's all about.
I liked it when you say competition time.
Oh, me too. Cartman.
Should we start again?
Go on.
Okay.
It's competition time.
Yes. Yes!
There we go. We gave a lot of stuff away over this year, and it never stopped. We got bigger and bigger, and we stopped going from one prize to two, which is mental, actually mental.
It is mental.
So on this episode, we're not going to break that down. We're not going to go back to one and be all tight. We're going to be... It's Christmas, isn't it? We've got to give stuff away. That's what it's all about. And
season
I told
of
people
giving.
My sack's going to be empty. So it's time to empty the sack. If you'd listened to the last episode, we made some new friends from Dark Bunny Tees, who are sound. I'm actually sat here now. I'm on their T-shirts.
Scarif
Beach.
Truth.
That looks wicked.
It's pretty amazing. Cool.
If the film's shit, I'm going to have to rip it up and not wear it. I'll be wearing it like, hey, look, this is the new Star Wars. But they've been good enough to give us a Die Hard jumper, which is for Christmas. Really, really cool.
Yeah.
And the question I put out there was, what is the name of the character that Bruce Willis plays in Die Hard? Now, I don't care what anyone says. Anyone in the world knows this. Even if you don't own a TV, whatever, you know that it is... Come on, Ben.
I don't know it. John McClane.
It's John McClane. So we're going to send a jumper to Joshua Michaels. But do you know what, guys? And this is what I'm going to say now. I get sick of giving stuff away and us never benefiting.
Mm-hmm. Ever. Very true.
It does my head in. Mm. I'll be honest with you. Now, I'm not just going to say this because they're nice people, but Dark Bunny Tees, if I was going to get a Christmas jumper, I would go to Dark mm-hmm. Bunny Tees. Yeah. They've only gone and given us jumpers.
You're oh shitting God. Me.
So instead oh of God. What normally happens, Ben,
yeah,
you've won one.
Dope.
Gemma, you've yes, won one.
Thanks. Wow.
And Mark, I've won one. We've actually got... Open them up, guys.
I'm doing
okay,
it.
Okay. Oh, my God. This
we've
is
got...
So
look
crazy.
At the bags
it's
as well.
It's in a tote bag.
A proper tote bag. And it's a proper diehard one. And then we've got actual... I've got the sizes right and everything.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is amazing.
Remember the mic levels, Gemma. Come on. We've got, I think yours is a different colour.
Oh, I've got the green one. You've got the red one.
But it'll look nice then.
That's rad. I love it, wow. man.
We and need to take a photo of this,
we're
guys.
Gonna, yeah, yeah. And look yeah. at the back. It's got the guns and everything. Oh. And for once, we've won a competition. We've got our own jumpers.
You know what? After 2.5 years, I think we've bloody earned it.
Yeah, so thank you, Dark Bunny
thank
Tees.
Thank you very sent much, us Dark one. Bunny Tees.
And we'll make sure that we put them out and everyone else can
absolutely
see how great these are.
This is the kitty's titties.
It's nice, isn't it? It is nice, though. It's such a nice jumper. And yeah. all the little prints and the little cars and the yippee-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay.
Yes, often. All that.
I'm going to wear this to work on Monday.
Good.
They'll send me home. It's inappropriate, but whatever.
It's awesome, isn't it?
That's yeah. amazing.
I love the fact that we can be nice and colourful like Christmas as well when we have
can,
our photo.
Oh, look at this tote bag as well.
I know, it's awesome, isn't it?
Carry me thank veg. You, thank me thank veg you. Home in that, me onions and whatnot.
To all the other companies out there, look, these guys have just got 5 minutes of our time, which will go out to a lot of people. Strongbow, what are you playing yeah. at? You could have had this.
Yeah, and you
we've
know what?
Been promoting these jabronis for 2 years yeah. now.
And you
these
know
guys
what?
With, have had 2 weeks.
With the tote bag as well, we could easily pack a load of Strongbow dark fruits in them.
Do you know what, Gemma? I think we could probably get 12 Strombos in that tote bag.
Oh.
So.
What's that name again?
Or I mean, Jack Daniels whiskey.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Or Maker's Mark.
Or this Hague Club ooh. That we've got in front of us here.
That's David Beckham. Hague yeah. Club.
Hague Club.
I have to drop it down a bit now because with this next prize from our good friends at Warner Brothers was the Fantastic mm-hmm. Beasts bundle.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. This has been probably our most popular competition we've ever done because I know what it's like. There's so many Harry Potter fans out there. This is prizes you can't just go into the Disney store or any shop or anything like that and buy. This is literally a mental. There's a journal, wand, shirts, pins, scarf, bag, the lot. This is going out to Kim Pritchard on Facebook. Now, the question I put out there was, you've seen this film, so I want to see if you actually know this.
Mm-hmm.
What is the American School of Magic called?
I can't remember. I've had a few strong votes. How am I going to remember?
It's
Ilvermory?
That's the one.
Yes! So,
and that's the School of Witchcraft. So that is going out to them. Now, as I said, I've got some new prizes to give away on this episode. It's Christmas, so we raise the bar again. So to celebrate the release of Disney's Moana, have you seen this, the new animation?
Ah, I know of it, yeah.
I know
we've
of it.
We've got Good Dinosaur, Zootropolis, The New Jungle Book and Alice with Looking Glass Blu-rays to give
are
away.
Are you kidding me? I literally bought those yesterday, all four of those.
Shut up.
No, honestly. I'll send you guys a shit. Photo. I'll that's send you guys
okay.
a photo.
Odd coincidence.
Yes. Just those four titles. You talk so much shit, it's unbelievable. But that's out in cinemas on December the 2nd.
Yeah.
Now, this is quite good, because if you listen to our last episode when we did overused actors,
mm-hmm.
what actor lends the voice to the demigod Marvi in Moana?
Yeah.
I think you know what I'm talking about there.
Mm.
But also, let's keep it in synergy. Bad Santa 2. I've got a Christmas jumper for Bad Santa. I've got a hat, a hip flask, some baubles, and a door hanger. Let's make it really easy, because people have listened. Who plays Bad Santa in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
And Dark Bunny have come up goods again.
Of course they have.
Really, I usually say come up trumps, but I'm not going to use
nope.
that because we're not going to use that word.
They've come up
so
good.
They've come up goods. Mm. Have you seen the Stay Puft jumper they've done?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really rad. It's
gorgeous.
We're going to give that away to someone if they leave us an iTunes rating.
Ah.
That's a nice one.
Yeah, an iTunes rating of 5. Yes. If you leave us an iTunes 1-star, you can jog on.
But they've also given us a Die Hard jumper. Let's run the comp again, but what is Stay Puft made out of? That's fair, yeah?
Yeah. Can we just roll back a minute to the question from Moana?
Yes.
I'm going to give away the answer. It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Okay, then.
But anyway, people aren't stupid, they know that. The reason why I want to bring it back is because, okay, this film is getting ridiculous reviews. Like on Metacritic, it's like 80%, Rotten Tomatoes, similar. People are saying it's a big, fat Disney hit. Undoubtedly, it will get nominated for Best Animated Film at the Oscars. More likely than not, some of the music from it will get nominated for Best Original Song. The original songs have been written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote and starred in Hamilton, which is the big, big musical hit in America right now. At the Oscars, the songs that are nominated for Best Original Song tend to get sung live on stage, which means, I believe, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is going to be on the fucking stage at the Oscars this year singing, and I cannot wait. Honest to God, it will be the greatest thing I've seen since WrestleMania 17.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Can't wait.
That is incredible. Yeah.
So you've heard that. We've got four prizes up for grabs this time, which is insane. We've won a prize this time. We're happy. Thank you, Dark Bunny Tees.
Yes,
you are literally
thank
our
you.
Friends for the foreseeable future, I think.
Yeah.
Keep them coming. And I'll announce all the winners on the Star Wars episode in 2 weeks' time.
It's movie masturbate time. Mm-hmm. We are at that stage of the podcast where we decide to choose our favourite performances.
Oh, sorry, another drink.
It's all right.
Mark.
Is
it's Christmas.
A... Could have waited.
I see it's another strawberry dark fruit.
Says Ben.
Hello.
Could have waited.
Ooh, from the left to the right.
Come on, Gemma, and you have one.
Oh, shall we?
Come on.
There we go. Oh, lovely stuff.
There we go. So, as I was just explaining, what we do is we take a name from the pot of plenty and we describe what our favourite performance from that particular actor or actress is. So, on the last episode, we chose Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin Phoenix, or Joycan. I don't know how we pronounce his name, but Joaquin will do.
Yeah.
That's what IMDb says. And we decided to go and pick our favourite performance from that film. I don't know about you guys, but this is probably the most difficult one that we've done.
I agree, because he has made a career of fantastic performances.
Yes.
In a short time. He's not been around that long, really. But there is so much good stuff to choose from.
How did you find it, Mark?
I found it very good, whacking on masturbate.
Brilliant.
But so... yeah, he reminds me of Paul Thomas Anderson in the fact that his CV is just good stuff, good stuff, good stuff. And there's not much shit. He just does solid stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but even today I was still a million an hour. And I think I ended up flipping a coin to see which one I would go for. But I'm pleased with my result, though.
Yeah, me too.
So, Mark, I want to throw this to you first.
So back in the olden days when we used to do a feature called Skip Back in Time, in 2013, this was my favourite film of the year. 2013, the favourite film of all.
Yeah.
It's Her.
Yeah.
It's a great choice.
Now, hey, I could have just done a bit of a switch then and gone, but it's not. It's this, but it's not. It is Her.
Sorry,
I got fooled.
Before you start, let's get it out there. It's my pick as well.
Away you go.
Away you go.
Now, this film actually made me question my marriage, made me question my love for
my
wife.
Oh, poor Joe.
Made me question if there's actually such a thing as love, that you would need another person in the world.
Do we need to edit this out? Because I don't think Joe needs to hear this.
But luckily, my wife proved that that is all a myth, and she's the greatest thing in the world after The Room and Mac and Me. But no, on a serious note, this film really hit a note of a lot of kind of relationships and marriages, and do you really need that companion in your life when it could just be an operating system? It could just be the voice and the kind of, this is deep, but it's true. It's that companionship you can get where you don't actually need someone physically there. You've got that conversation. You've got that stuff that you can offload on. They could even have sex to the point they needed to with each other over the sort of earpiece. Scarlett Johansson's voice is something I could have sex over all day, every day.
Yeah.
But this acting performance, he is in 95% of this film.
Yeah.
More than any other film that you ever watch, he is the centerpiece throughout the whole thing. Yes, you get a bit of Amy Adams, but it is all whacking from the start to the end.
It's a whack attack.
It really is. It's whack-a-day. But you get, and I want a little plaster on my chin if I ever go on whack-a-day, but that's only where Tim Mallett's balls have hit them.
Jesus. That is only going to mean anything to our listeners who are like 32 or above.
We've got a few.
Who are from England.
Yes. If not, go on whackaday.com. That's definitely
that
not that
exist.
Now.
Go on YouTube and
Google
Whackaday
it.
Or Timmy Mallet.
But,
or Operation U-Tree.
But in Her, this performance gives you heartbreak, gives you happiness, gives you highs, gives you lows, gives you heartache like you've never felt. It is the biggest kick in the balls. Like on 500 Days of Summer, it's like, I could have had anything but you. That line, this is delivered again and again, and I've never felt so shit, but also so good in a performance. There is nothing like this film. It is, I don't care what anyone says, it stood out for me in 2013. I made my friend Rich, who was on the Star Wars episode, watch it last year, and he nearly cried. He just looked around at me and went, whoa.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable, and the reason the film is so good is because of him. Anyone else would not do this role justice.
I agree with you entirely, but it's so funny that you and I kind of interpret this differently. So you've interpreted it as a thing where it kind of proves you don't need a physical human in your life to love because you can do it with an OS. Whereas the film means the opposite to me. The film is a treatise on loneliness. It's about being lonely and having to find something that you can grab onto and love and be with. So I kind of see it the opposite way around as
awesome.
You.
Awesome.
Wow. But that's fantastic. Good.
That's why the film is so brilliant, that it's opened up to that kind of interpretation. But his performance is insane. As you quite rightly say, he's in like 95% of the film. And often a lot of the film is shot in close-up. It's just his beautifully expressive face on the camera. And, you know, you've got these bits where all he's hearing is the OS, Scarlett Johansson's voice in his ear. And his expressions will change from sadness to happiness to joy. And it's just beautifully done. And it's so sad and so melancholy. And the ending is a kick in the dick.
Yes.
When it turns out that the OS hasn't just been having this relationship with him. All the OSs across the world have been joining together in a collective, and this particular one says, oh, I've fallen in love with thousands of people simultaneously, you know, etc. Mm-hmm. And then they all go off to become a higher being. Wow.
Credit to Spike Jonze as well.
Spike Jonze is an artistic genius. Prior to being in the movies, he was a music video director and a professional skateboarder and all this kind of shit. Then he moved into movies and did things like
Three Kings,
which is great. And what's the film I'm thinking of?
Where the Wild Things Are?
No, not that one. With the actor's name in the film being John Malkovich, of course.
Yes, brilliant film.
But this was the first film, Her, that not only directed, he wrote as well. Yeah. And it's an idea he had knocking around in his head for years. And if you have that kind of beautiful idea, you need to populate it with the right people, and he couldn't have picked a better person than Joaquin Phoenix. As we said, in a career of brilliant performances, this one just stands above. It's masterful. And the thing that makes me really fucking angry about this film, he wasn't nominated for an Oscar.
No.
Not only should he have been nominated, he should have won. Matthew McConaughey won for Dallas Buyers Club, which wasn't a bad decision by any stretch, because McConaughey rules in that film. The fact that he wasn't even nominated,
It's
the
worst.
I don't get it.
It's the most shocking choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Like, this film, one of my friends said to me, she said, what's Her like? And this is the way I summed it up to her. I said, you can pause that film at any moment throughout the film and print the screen.
Yeah.
And it would make a canvas that you could put on your wall that would look breathtaking. Every shot, every colour, every bit of cinematography, every scene is perfect. It looks stunning. The way they create the virtual reality ahead of itself, and it's like he goes back to his flat and it's all like virtual reality, like holograms.
Yeah.
That is done so well that you know that's what we will be getting with PlayStations in 5-10 years' time. And this is probably like 2013, and he nails it. It doesn't look cheap. It doesn't look shit. He's lying on the beach and it looks like the greatest beach. The flare from the sun is coming through. It is unbelievable. And if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Her, please watch it. And if you think it's shit, okay, you've got no emotions and you're dead inside.
You're an idiot.
But it is that good.
Yeah. It is. And I think the listeners, I'm sure, will tweet us and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the cinematographer was Hoyt Van Hatema, who has done a few things recently, been nominated for a few things, and is a fantastic cinematographer. The thing I love about this is it makes me think of Black Mirror in a way.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Yeah. I like things that are futuristic, but not a million years in the future. I like things that seem like the world we live in, but ever so slightly different. And that's the thing I love about Black Mirror. You watch an episode of Black Mirror and you think, oh, this is set today. But then they'll have some weird-ass tech and you think, oh, no, it's ever so slightly in the future. And that's what Her feels like. So it's sci-fi, but not completely out the realms of possibility. It feels like a year away, a couple of years away.
Exactly. It feels real.
Yeah.
Ex Machina's like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
It's done so well that you're not like, okay, flying cars and people are suddenly ridiculous robots that look so wrong. It's Listen to me and Ben, we have completely jizzed everywhere. This is what a masturbate is all about.
And we did it. When we reviewed this film back in the day, when we talked about this film, we did the same thing. And I love the fact that our opinions haven't changed. And if anything, we've loved it more as time has gone by. We love it even more 3 years later or whatever it is.
And this feature's so good because I watched it again this week. And I watched it on my... I think it's a film you should watch on your own. It's definitely not a boyfriend and girlfriend date night or a, you know, let's go and, you know, let's before we get... A bit rude in the bedroom, or what do you say? Something not
locking boots.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything after this. You're just going to look at each other and stare at each other.
You're putting those boots away in the wardrobe.
So, Mark, do you say to Joe, let's go and get rude in the bedroom? And Gemma, do you say to Greg, let's knock boots? Is that how it happens for you?
He's thinking we're mucking out some wellies.
I've made sure I've never, ever let my wife watch this film. That's because I don't want a divorce right now.
She should never watch Gone Girl either.
No, or 500 Days of Summer.
Or The Room. Come on then, let's top that, because I'm not going to say this now and be arsy, but me and Ben have just
good luck, Gemma,
blown it out of the water.
Well, I'm just going to sit in my corner over here and I'm going to say The Master.
Great choice.
Her was... The other choice that I was flipping over. But for me, I can't get over just how raw Joaquin Phoenix is in this film. So he plays a sailor who clearly has post-traumatic stress disorder and he can't find his way in the world. He tries to be a photographer in a department store, messes that up. He tries to be a farm worker, again, inadvertently poisons an old man. So he decides to stow away on a boat and just see where it takes him. And it ends up being hosted by this very charismatic chap called Lancaster Dodd. And he's got him and his mates around and they have a group called The Cause. And as we later find out in the film, it's a cult. They have these ideals on how to live and how to see the world and move forward. And Joaquin's character, Freddie Quell, Freddie, kind of gets drawn into this world and he starts becoming Lancaster's kind of under the wing chap. So he starts learning about the cause and really finding his place within the group. But unfortunately, Freddie is battling the secret alcohol addiction. It starts becoming a little bit more evident with some of the members in the cause and it starts turning against him. So he's having to really fight his demons, but at the same time, trying to find his place in the world. And we see this in such scenes as the wall scene. In this great big house that's hosted by a character who's played by Laura Dern. And he's made to go from the left to the right of the wall and try and describe exactly how he's feeling. But he just sees this wooden wall. But Lancaster's trying to get this out of him, saying, no, you need to find out a little bit more about it. You need to search within yourself. And he just can't. And the frustration you see and the anger that he represents, it's unlike anything I've ever seen in a role that he's done before. Yeah. It's a very angry role. And funnily enough, it's almost like the antithesis of what he is in Her as Theodore Twombly. Again, even with a scene in the prison cell when him and Lancaster get arrested and they're side by side in the cell and you see Freddie's arms sort of, you know, incarcerated behind his back. And he just flips into this kind of rage where he bangs himself against this metal bunk bed like over and over and over again and then smashes this porcelain toilet with his feet, and there's just so much rage that I don't think I've ever seen
anger
that kind.
Is crazy.
Never. I've never seen. It's been such a long time.
Didn't you tell me that he actually did he hurt himself in that scene? And it was he
now possibly
that broke the toilet, or he did something that was
That toilet. It was part of a place of historical importance,
and he busted it up.
And he busted it up, and I think they had to pay like thousands and thousands of dollars afterwards.
So they kept it in, but that was not meant to happen.
Yeah, but the fact is, you just see this absolute rawness that is within him that he might have not have known that was within him, and it's just captured all on camera. And this is what I love about films, the fact that his performance in this film just displays exactly why actors do what they do. They're given this platform where they can just really let loose and not worry about having to be this kind of facade that they have to hide behind. Joaquin Phoenix, in my opinion, is probably one of the greatest actors alive today.
Hell yeah.
And the fact that this topic particularly was so difficult to choose from. I mean, we could have chosen things like Gladiator.
Oh, he's so good in that.
Walk the Line. Even Blue to Die For, where he's just this innocent teenager. they're just shout outs, but for me, this was one of the greatest roles he's ever done, but I completely validate her as well. It was such a hard decision.
Yeah, and the thing you said there is about how it's kind of the opposite of her.
Mm.
In her, it's the low end of the spectrum, whereas he's this quiet, yeah, introverted, melancholy man. And in The Master, he's this guy who is full of this pent-up rage, and that rage comes out. Mm. It is the kind of two extremes of Joaquin Phoenix, and it just proves the range and the brilliance he has. I love that film. I love The Master.
It's,
I mean,
wonderful.
You know, in the past, we've done our favourite directors of all time, and Paul Thomas Anderson was in my top three. I think he's a fucking god. He doesn't make that many films. I think he's made 8 in total, or maybe 7. Not many. And all of them, with the first one he did, Hard Eight, is okay. But everything he's done since then has been a masterpiece. What was the last one we reviewed?
Inherent Vice.
Yeah, that was okay. So the book ended.
Most
one,
of them,
not the best. The ones in the middle.
Thomas Pynchon, though. How could you feel Thomas Pynchon?
I know. But I love Paul Thomas Anderson. It's a great film. Which, you know, for those of you who don't know, it's basically a kind of a parody or a view on Scientology. This whole cult is basically Scientology. And he's denied that. He said, no, it isn't. No. Yeah, you're only saying that because they're powerful in Hollywood. Yeah. And you have to say that.
And he's kind of mates with Tom Cruise.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm sure he got Tom Cruise to watch it. And Cruise is like... Nyeh.
And they've never disclosed the conversation since. Yeah. They've just said it's between them two.
Yeah, be like, I'm not happy about that.
In that way.
I'm going to sue you.
That's not my favourite.
I don't like this at all.
I'm going to sue your ass.
This is good for us.
I'm not sure what he sounds like Michael Jackson, but he does now.
Minnie Mouse. Why are we keeping on with this?
As far as we're concerned, this is how Tom Cruise sounds. This is why we should drink on every episode.
Yeah.
But it's a great film. And the thing is, it's not a diss on Scientology per se. Is it Lester, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yes, it is.
You know, you see him as this guy who kind of rules the roost. He is the L. Ron Hubbard character. But it's not overtly negative about him. And it's not about that this is a horrible cult. It's the story is about how a guy who is looking for something in his life, and he might not know what that thing that he's looking for is, but he's looking for something, and that's how he falls in with this cult or this religion or this whatever you want to call it.
It's just that point in his life. He's just come back from war.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there when you've just like experienced all these horrors? And it's just focused on that particular segment of his life. And I don't think it was anything negative.
No, I think it's actually quite sympathetic to cults, whether it's Scientology or any kind of movement. I think it kind of says we understand why people who are looking for something in their lives might fall into this kind of thing. So I kind of understand the reaction to this from the Scientology community wasn't that bad. Usually they get all the lawyers on earth onto you and just destroy your life, but they didn't do that to PTA because I don't think it was overtly negative.
Not at all.
I think it was fairly sympathetic.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, guys, I'm ready to score this.
Three hours later.
But doesn't that say a lot about... I think this is probably the best mass debate subject.
My favourite one so far.
Me too.
At least since Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
We put it out to social media, which we always do, and you've mentioned some of them there, but on Twitter, at the Marco... I've drank too much. At the Marco guy, Walk the Line, which he does very well.
Film.
And it's not easy to ever take the role of someone else and do it justice. You always get ripped. No one ever says a bad thing about that. Johnny Cash, it's not easy shoes to fill.
No.
Yeah. At Monica BBM, The Master, totally agrees. This is one that's come through a lot, and hell of a lot, as his early performance. At Vintage GT, Parenthood.
Yeah,
because he's a young performance.
It's a great film
with George Martin.
It's fun,
but he's Steve Martin.
Who's George Martin?
I don't know. Oh, I think he's sent to do the Beatles.
He was the producer. Yeah,
there you go. And Coldplay. Terrible.
Oh Christ!
At T Brennan Bristol has put The Master. At Raps. God, I really am drunk. At the Raptors Pod has said Gladiator, which is a underrated performance. And when you were talking then, I wanted to stop you both and say, when you were saying how much he's one of the best actors in the world, what I would say is probably the most underrated actor in the world because he never gets the recognition.
Yep.
People never talk about his films and he's very under the radar and it's weird.
It's because he very rarely does blockbusters. The closest thing to a blockbuster I can think of him doing is Signs, just because it was a new Shyamalan film.
Yeah. And that wasn't a bad performance. Considering the film's not great up against Mel Gibson, he did okay for what was needed. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'll finish on. At Aloy Jour has said, Signs, okay, it's not his best, but it's her personal favourite and that is what this feature's all about.
Absolutely.
I've got a sack full again. Even though I was supposed to give it away on this episode, I'm ready to get it out and masturbate again.
Brilliant.
Ben.
It's my pick. So I've got, your... I've got the Goblet of Glory.
Goblet of Glory.
I'm swirling it around.
He's got two fingers in the goblet.
That's my style. Here's the next one. Right, okay. So, in 2 weeks' time on our Star Wars special, we shall be mass debating over... Read that out, Gemma.
Oh, Tommy Wiseau!
Does it actually say Tommy?
That's what it says, but obviously we're not doing that.
Right, let's re-pick.
I put that into the bowl in the hope that one of you two would pick it out. The joke has somewhat backfired because I picked it out, so it didn't work. Right,
okay,
we can do it again. Here we go.
Let's do it again.
Give us a give me a proper drum roll. The real... This
I
is
am
the real
annoyed.
Quiz. The real one we're doing it for is... Oh, a fellow we've mentioned today. Samuel L. Jackson.
Excellent.
Amazing.
I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? That or his dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's rewatch time, and this one is like this time it's The Big Lebowski. Now, anyone that listens to this podcast has probably heard this film mentioned before, and I did actually forget that we'd not done it as a rewatch. So, knowing Gemma is now here full time and we're going with things, and we love the Coen Brothers, I wanted to pick this because we're on a run of really good films at the moment. We're not doing that whole Sharknado or these really god awful films. We're sticking at, and do you know what? I'm really enjoying doing these classics and these cult classics.
Absolutely.
Yes, The Crash was not a film that we loved, but it was also something that was kind of a cult film that we could really,
and we've done it.
Digest.
We've done it now. We've crashed.
But it was interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is for me a classic. Now, it's not a spoiler to get to the score. I'm sure you two are on the same page. This film is a cult classic that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should know the gist of the story by now. It's Coen Brothers, for fuck's sake. It's Jeff Bridges, the dude. But his actual real name is Jeff Lebowski. Now, Jeff Lebowski is actually mistaken for another Lebowski who owes a lot of money via his wife. A lot of money. Now, the people that are after him are not the type of people you want to owe money to. Let's put it this way. They are literally the scum, the really bad rogues of the world. And now it's basically the film of him not very happy about them soiling his rug. That's the main gist of this film.
It tied the room together.
It really did. And now the story tells of him basically spiraling into the Los Angeles underworld with the help of his good friends and his bowling buddies. And basically, that is the gist of it. I don't want to do a big, long speech about it. Everyone has seen this film.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Mm-hmm. And while we're going to be mulling over it, I'm going to drink a White Russian. How about you guys?
With Kahlua vodka, that's Smirnoff vodka.
Yeah,
I don't want endorsements from an ice company. Keep your ice. And Sainsbury's milk.
whole milk.
Yeah, but we are actually, normally we're very anal with our editing and I'll edit any sounds out of us drinking or this. This is Christmas, it's not quite Christmas, but this is the chance for us to drink.
If you hear the ice cubes clinking, just deal with it. We're
Join in. Pour yourself a White Russian.
Pause the podcast right now. Go to your off license, get the ingredients, and pour yourself a White Russian, or as the dude calls them, a Caucasian.
Oh,
let's get a round of Caucasians.
Amazing.
In.
So we will be sipping along because it's our chance to really enjoy ourselves. I'm going to throw this straight to you, Ben.
Yes.
You know how much I love this film. I'm not going to be shocked with you suddenly going, "I hate it. I think it's overrated." Just gush for me over this film and tell me why it deserves the status of a cult classic. And the Coen Brothers deserve the title of geniuses.
I can't even go, no, you're wrong there. I disagree with those things you just said. All of those things you've just said are absolutely, obviously true. It is arguably the Coen Brothers' best film. I'd probably put it on a par with Fargo, but it is as good as anything they've ever done. And the acting performances are sublime. So Jeff Bridges, we're going to come to Jeff Bridges in a bit. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think Jeff Bridges is in our pot of plenty for a future movie masturbate. Someone who's not in our pot, however, is John Goodman.
What?
I don't believe John Goodman's in the pot.
I was thinking this as I was watching the film.
So let's just say it now. This is the best thing John Goodman's ever done. It's an absolute masterpiece. His character, Walter Sobchak, this militant right-wing guy who was converted to Judaism in later life and will not work on the Shabbos. You know, he won't drive a car. He shouldn't answer a phone unless it's an emergency. And these mood swings he has, this like quickness to anger that he has, it's just the best thing he's ever done, and one of the best things I've ever seen in cinema. I could watch this film over and over again. It's just over 2 hours long, this film. It's a long old film, and you know, it's a twisty, turny, shaggy dog story. And those kind of films sometimes don't bear repeat watching. They can be a bit of a slog. Yeah. This ain't one of them. There are a million one things why I can watch this film over and over again, but John Goodman is the main one. I love him so much.
Do you know what? Since we've done the rewatch, obviously the point of it is to revisit a classic film or a dog shit film, yeah, and we basically speak about it. Now, I'm not speaking too often on behalf of Ben and Gemma, but we usually leave it till the weekend before to make it sure it's really nice and fresh. Mm-hmm. This, after 2 years, has been the first rewatch where I watched it at about Tuesday, Wednesday night, and I watched it again today. It's the first rewatch I've watched twice because I enjoyed it that much and I just wanted it to stay with me and be fresh again.
Yeah.
I've never done that in 2 years, and it's literally a film I will never get bored of, and I will never, ever want to never not watch it. It's a film you should watch with friends, with family, with anyone. Just get them involved in this film because there's everything from the start to finish, the directing, the music choices, the acting, Julianne Moore, everything about it, all the people involved, it is just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Gemma, please agree with me and Ben. Otherwise, I won't lie, you're out.
Sucker.
Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Ho, ho, ho.
Well, it's one of the coolest movies ever made, isn't it?
Yep.
It is one of the coolest films. The script is so much fun. It's hilarious. The dream sequences itself is just an absolute work of art. Mm. And the characters, how much fun can you get with characters in a film? They are all so different, but they're so great to even be interacting with as well. I mean, in a nutshell, this film is a mistaken identity mixed with bowling. It yeah. shouldn't work. This should be some kind of sci-fi shit that's on like 12 o'clock at night on a rerun every other month. But this is perfection.
I love you.
I love this film so much. It's so great. Good.
It's like a Raymond Chandler noir mixed with a bowling movie, as you say. It's so odd. There's no film like this.
No.
Tell me a film. Even Kingpin, which is a great, funny yeah. Farrelly Brothers film about bowling, is not in the same sort of district as this, as good as it is.
What about...
what is like this? Nothing.
Nothing.
Bowling for Columbine.
Wow. Wow.
That's not like
ooh.
It.
Nope. It's just got dark.
I think I can safely say that there is no film like The Big Lebowski.
Yes. But what I do want to say on more of a serious note is how sexy and how great do they make bowling look?
Oh.
Jesus, when he's bowling, and the way that they do the side angle, the music they play, the way he's like drying his
Hotel
hands.
Hotel California.
Absolutely. My God, the way they make it all look yep. on that pan shot of them and each. Oh,
my
God.
You know what? He's the only man I've ever known or seen to wear a jumpsuit whilst getting a 10-pin strike.
He looks damn good, man.
He really does.
John
really
Turturro as the Jesus.
The Jesus.
Looks so good in a jumpsuit. And they do it well. I say they. He is effectively doing mm-hmm. a sequel to this.
Absolutely.
The Coens aren't involved in any way or shape mm-hmm. or form. They've given him permission to use that character. And he's doing a film. It's a remake of some French... I forget the name of the film, but I'll tell you after when I look it up. Mm. It's like a very odd French film from like the 80s or 70s, I think, that's about a bunch of perverts who go around having like threesomes and foursomes and gangbangs with people.
And why not?
And apparently John Turturro loves this film and wants to remake it, and he thought... I want to play the main character as Jesus
as you
from
do.
Big Lebowski, and the Coens have given him permission to do it. Excellent. Tellingly, though, they're not producers on the film, which makes me think they've yeah. kind of gone, do your thing. Yeah. We don't want to be involved.
Okay, so stick around for 2017's
we'll review
to
it.
The end review. Yeah.
But the sound, the music choices that Coen Brothers nail every time, Fargo, yeah. all the classics. Let's be honest, they nail it. It's like going into the unheard of record collection and finding those classics that you just want. Yeah. Like Tarantino, let's give them credit. The music is so important to movies nowadays, mm-hmm. but back mm-hmm. then in the 90s, the soundtracks you would go out and buy. You don't do it anymore as much now.
No,
you don't.
True. No,
every single song off Pulp Fiction you want to own on record.
Yeah, try Jackie Brown as well.
Exactly. Mm. Every single song on Fargo, and especially this, yes. I want to own the vinyl. I want to hear that crispness of every song. It is incredible and adds to every scene and is done so well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing about soundtracks these days is that it's too commercial. So if you want to release a soundtrack and you want it to have any kind of traction, it needs to just be filled of the current hot artists. So if you a soundtrack for a film comes out and it has Nicki Minaj on and Kanye West and a load of other jabronis that no one really actually likes, they just pretend to because that's what popularity is. But back in the day, you could release a soundtrack and it would have a song on that came out last week. It would have a song on that came out in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. And it would be this collection of songs that fit the film but worked as a cohesive whole. Now it's just whatever's hot, whatever's new.
Yeah.
And that's why soundtracks these days are a piece of shit, unless you're someone like Edgar Wright who actually puts the effort in.
Yes.
But most directors aren't auteurs anymore, or their studios don't give them the latitude to actually put out a good soundtrack, and it's just shit now.
Yeah, definitely.
Shame.
I miss those days, actually. I think the 90s really nailed it, you know.
90s were hell unbelievable. Yeah, look at the films. Look at the cult classics that we talk about nowadays.
Trainspotting.
The 90s is incredible.
Yeah.
The Craft.
Everything.
Even Scream. Scream had some great songs in it.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Incredible. But also the
Spawn,
90s.
Man.
Give us...
Oh my God, yes.
The soundtrack for Spawn was dope. The soundtrack for Spawn was better than the goddamn film.
Yes.
Silverchair, man.
Silverchair.
Yes. Awesome. But back to The Big Lebowski. Ben has hit the nail on the head there.
Always.
We're talking about John Goodman. John Goodman never does shit. Even Red State by Kevin Smith, he's the best thing in it, and he is. And I know you haven't seen it, but he's fantastic. Is there a better character? I mean, the dude is the dude, and you love him. You love everything about him.
I
you love the fact he's walking around in his slippers and his pajama bottoms.
You know what?
And he's a bummer.
For me, even Brandt, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, he's so
I love
good.
Him.
He's a little toady.
Yeah. The way how he presents himself, he is such a yes man.
Yeah.
He is so in the moment. But the way how he reacts to everything that his boss, even the dude reacts, the way how he just, it's perfection.
And even when Tara Reid says, "I'll suck your dick for $1,000. Yeah. He's like, oh, she's very popular between the family.
That look on his face. You'll find on the internet, there's a lot of kind of memes of Philip Seymour Hoffman's make the way he reacts to that cheesy grin. Like,
she is such a character.
I'm just going to go to the cash point. Incredible. But he's not allowed to watch unless he pays $500.
That's it.
Unbelievable. To be fair as well, Tara Reid was great.
She's brilliant in this. She's only in maybe three scenes, and she's so good.
Yeah.
We give her a pasting, rightfully, because her career's gone to shit, and that's her fault. She doesn't want
to. And most of America have given her a pasting.
Oh.
But
allegedly.
Yes. But it's true. Let's give her credit. Let's give her credit, guys. She's great in this.
She is very good in this.
She is.
She is indeed. We've kind of skirted around the dude. Jeff Bridges is my man. He's one of my favourite all-time actors. I think we did our top three actors and he wasn't in my three, so I'm a mug. He's at least in my five, I would say. And the thing I love about this film, as good as he is by all accounts, in real life, Jeff Bridges is the fucking dude. He just is the coolest, most laid-back kind of surfery guy. Just have a drink, let the world do its thing and you get through it. Bridges is the dude.
Yeah.
And I would give my right nut to meet Jeff Bridges and just shake his hand and be like, yeah.
But what I love about him, and this is I think we probably said this on previous episodes, it's a sign of a true actor. When someone completely transforms, so they're completely different from their personal persona to what they are normally associated with films, and he completely transforms as the dude. You've never seen a role by Jeff Bridges that is similar to the dude.
And that's the funny thing, because by all accounts he is like that in real life, but we haven't seen him like that on film before. He's usually the kind of hard-ass cowboy or whatever, but it's the first time he got to be himself. And by all accounts, the Coens, when they wrote this, having worked in Hollywood for years, they wrote it with him in mind because they knew him, or they knew from, you know, secondhand maybe, they knew what he was like, and they said, we've written this for you.
And the thing is, we were talking about him only a few weeks ago on
Hell or High Water,
and he gives a performance still to this day that shits on anyone else in the film. Bring in anyone, you know, bring Matey Boy from Star Trek. He doesn't touch, he's not worthy to clean his shoes. Where it's true, it's true.
Who's Matey Boy from Star Trek?
What's you do name? Not shine my shoes.
What's his name?
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine. Even though Pine rules in that film, Pine's to be fair, great. But you're right. But he's no Bridges.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Bridges still today turns up in a film, if it's a small part role or the main role. Mm-hmm. Even in the new Tron film that came out, he nailed it. Yeah, everything he does, he gives everything to.
And that's funny because we've talked about him a lot over the 2.5 years or whatever this podcast, and often it's in terms of bad films we've seen, but he's always the best. Even when we've dissed Tron, we've always said the CGI was wank, but he was great, because he is. He's one of those guys that elevates everything, because he's never anything less than flawless.
We need to get him
in the pot.
Let's get him in a pot.
He better be.
He is in the pot, baby.
Yes!
Because I want to add John Goodman in today.
Can we?
Well, we've done it.
Yeah!
It's too late now. We've done Woo-hoo! John. But Jeff is in the pot.
Good.
Also, the one thing I did a bit of research about this film, it's actually been modelled on a film in the 1940s starring Humphrey Bogart called The Big Sleep.
Really?
Yes. Now, The Big Sleep is a detective story. So it's this character, Bogart, he kind of finds out about what's happening. He kind of is the protagonist. He wants to be a lot more proactive. Whereas the dude is kind of the exact opposite of what Bogart's character was. So he doesn't search for people. He doesn't go looking for business. It kind of goes to him. He's actually looking for compensation rather than, you know, I want to find this out. And he has no idea what's going on, whereas Bogart's character originally knew what was happening. And it's the complete antithesis of this detective story, The Big Sleep. And I never knew that until today.
No, I didn't know that.
So like, you learn something new every
and,
day.
And you know what? This is exactly why the Coen brothers are just such masterful producers and directors.
I have a weird thing with the Coens, because I absolutely love them. I think they're some of the smartest, most generously intelligent and creative people in Hollywood. But they seem like a couple of miserable fuckers, right? Have you ever seen them interviewed?
Yes.
Yes.
So people say to them, oh, so what do you think of The Big Lebowski? And they go, oh, people care about that more than we do. We moved on. Fuck me, man.
Yeah.
You've done this sublime piece of art that is art. And anyone who disagrees that filmic work is art, they're a bullshit artist. But they're kind of like, we've done it, it's in the past, we've moved on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And I'd rather they were Billy Big Bollocks. I'd rather they went, yeah, it's fucking ace, man, we rule! But they don't. They're like, we've moved on.
I think they need some PR training.
And what I love about the Coen brothers is none of their films, two of them are never the same. They will go and do something like Intolerable Cruelty, where you think, that's not the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
That's no way. And then they'll go and do Fargo, and then they'll go and do something completely random.
Burn After Reading.
Yeah. Exactly.
No Everything. Country for so Old Men.
You two have just proven they're not flawless, because you said Intolerable Cruelty and Burn After Reading, which are distinctly average films, as is The Lady Killers.
Yes.
But they can't all be winners. They can't all be winners. I think they've directed maybe 12, 13 films, something like that.
Mm.
And let's say 75% are winners. It's a damn good hit ratio. It really is.
Anything else you really want to say about this amazing film? I mean, we've talked about the act and we've talked about the main lead roles. Yeah. I don't think we give Buscemi enough love here.
Oh my God, I love the fact that he gets told to shut the fuck up every situation.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
He probably says about 20 lines in the whole film.
And I've read... When I first saw this, I kind of thought, why would you get Steve Buscemi in a film and then mug him off and not give him anything to do? But it's because he'd been in multiple Coen Brothers films. So it's not as if they just hired a ringer and not used him.
Exactly.
They used him because he was their friend. But from what I've read, it's because he was in Fargo, which came out the year before this, I think. So, you know, this is the Coens on a fucking streak. Yes. Undertaker-style streak. Of
brilliant. Well, it's the M streak. We beat it. We're 23-0 now, guys.
Yes. Yeah, baby. Hell yeah. So they brought Buscemi in because in Fargo, he was this motor mouth who would not stop talking. So in this film, they made him a guy who talked every now and again, but then Walter would say, you're out of your element, Donnie! Shut the fuck up, Donnie! Amazing.
Such a Marvel and then character.
Poor Donnie dies and ends up in a coffee can.
And then he ends up in like the dude's face.
Most of it's in his beard.
That little minor scrap between the dude and Walter at the
so
end.
Good.
Yes.
And the dude is so furious for about 30 seconds, and then Walter says to him, fuck it, let's go bowling. That is the whole ethos of the whole film. If you wanted to sum up this film in one phrase, it'd be fuck it, let's go bowling.
Yeah.
Can I quickly talk about my favourite scene in the film?
No, we're done.
As long as it's not 20 minutes.
No, Mark, what's next?
No. I just want to talk about the gutball scene.
Well, hurry up. Don't do it in 20 minutes, Gemma style.
No. it's absolute perfection. You've got Saddam Hussein as the bowling shoe giver. Yes. You've got like dude as the handyman in the porno. And then you have, for some reason, Julianne Moore's character in a Viking girl outfit.
And it's sexy.
It's absolute perfection in terms of like mockumentary Hollywood kind of dance sequence in the 40s.
All of that is true. But also, how the frig have we not mentioned Julianne Moore?
And how does she literally get her involved to talk about being a nympho swinging from the floor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Orgasming, wanting the vagina portrayed as a sex toy. Yeah. My God.
I call it vagina art. I know men don't like the word vagina.
Yeah.
Julianne Moore.
Yeah. I want you to love me, but you ruined my dressing gown.
And what was her accent in this? Was she supposed to be English? Or was she supposed to be like a pretentious American who was like trying to be English?
Like a high-end New York socialite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was sexy. Decide.
It was hella sexy.
She is amazing.
Julianne Moore, man.
She can give it to me more.
I'm not usually into gingers.
Oh, okay, fine.
Sorry, Mark. He's strawberry blonde, Gemma.
No, auburn.
So he says.
I like to say autumn or it's mousy.
Not red. It's not red.
On that note, let's give this a rating. Because we have given it 20 minutes of love, and I'm so happy. That's all this needed. Some rewatches are just us gushing and spaffing over a film, and that's what it needs to be.
Indeed.
Well, we're not all just going to gush, are we, with penises?
Well, we've said spaff, spunk, gush. Yes. Is there any more, guys? Because honestly, this is supposed to be a family show.
We're going to, like, veto ejaculate. My spunk. Hang on.
Right. Score it.
Boy yogurt all
come
over
on.
The place.
Who's first?
You.
Me? I did originally score this a 9 on my notes, but... sod it. Let's do 10.
Oh,
this is absolute perfection. This is exactly what the Coen brothers is all about. There really is just no negative about this film. So sod it. 10 out of 10.
Mark?
I'm just going to give it a 10 because I'm slightly drunk. And I won't lie. I just, it's just easier to not have to try and explain why. Yeah, 10.
I'm going to be the one asshole then. I'm going to give it a 9. It is a damn perfect film. I can't think of a thing I don't like, but I wouldn't necessarily put it against the films I love. I wouldn't put it against Blade Runner. Nor should I. I mean, it'd be a stupid comparison. But because Blade Runner and those are a 10, it's one notch down. So it's a 9. But it doesn't fucking matter, does it? Because all over, it's 10 out of 10, baby!
Yes!
And I just want to say, I think at this moment in time, it's a big statement. It's the best cult film of all time.
Hell to the yeah.
Fair play.
Right then, Gemma. Now, I don't want to put you under much pressure.
Wow.
But the next episode is Star Wars Rogue One, which is the biggest film of the year. Star Wars Know What to Do at Christmas. End the year on the biggest movie release. It's going to take more money than anything else this year, probably put together.
Yeah.
You need to match it with something. Now, I'm not going to plant a seed in your head, but I'd like it to be Christmassy. So no pressure. But if it isn't, don't worry.
If you fuck this up, you're out.
Yes, because we had a contract that no one saw on social media that signed that said your rewatch choice won't be lazy.
Yeah, we did the fake contract
that
people saw.
But this is the real contract.
This is the real contract.
Okay, so as we're doing Rogue One on the next episode... and it is kind of Christmas. I think it's only fair I need to do a Christmas-themed rewatch.
Good.
So for the next episode, we're going to set the traps. We're going to be watching Home Alone.
Yes! Of course we are!
We're almost at the end of this incredible show, and it's quite sad, but you know what time it is, don't you? It's time for Top of the Props, but it's not just Top of the Props, it's the final round of Top of the Props, where I forfeited my game last week, and I gave it away on purpose to make this episode more tense. That's what I did. So thank you, listeners, for picking up on that and knowing I gave that away. So to make it more interesting, it is the final now. This is the big one. People talk about the Champions League final or the Wimbledon final, but it's Top of the Props final. This
big
is
time.
This is where Paddy Power and Betfair and people are going crazy. Is it going to be Gemma? Is it going to be Ben? For anyone that hasn't listened to this, I suggest you go back and listen to the last two episodes, because this game show, Fair Play to Gemma, is really good. We reveal five different props. Now, we start with a hard prop, and it gets easier as it goes along. Why is that funny? Jesus Christ.
You said hard.
So I will reveal a prop at a time, and if they get it on the first one, they get 5 points. Then it goes to the second prop, and then it's 4 points. And as you can see, it goes down as the easier the prop gets. After the five props, they can get 1 point. We take note of the scores, and basically after the five rounds, we then score it, and one of them will win. Give Gemma a couple more minutes. So to start things off, are you both ready?
Yes.
Ready. I'm going to reveal the first film by prop, and it's not easy. And for anyone that listened back last week and said, Mark, I can't believe you didn't get Back to the Future, you come here and sit in the chair. It is not easy, but I was a bit of an idiot.
It's not easy. And you get locked out, don't you? If you get it wrong, you get locked out.
And Gemma didn't know this, but you get locked out for that round, and then you get to come back in on the next one.
You say she didn't know it.
She invented the game.
She invented the game, but pretends like she didn't know
But she didn't know it. Ridiculous. Are you both ready for your first round of Top of the Props?
Yep.
Yes.
Just remember that a lot is riding on this. So the first prop, a racquetball bat. So would any of you like to take a guess at this stage?
No.
Nope, thank you.
Nope. The second prop, a trampoline. So we've got a racquetball bat and a trampoline.
No, thank you.
No, let's go for the next one.
The third one is a can of silly string.
God. I bet there's people screaming at
the
name.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
But we're not those people. Let's go for the next one.
So this one's going to be worth 2 points.
Okay.
Okay.
A large piano.
Big.
Correct.
Oh! Yes, baby!
Well done there. That's pretty good going, to be fair.
Hang on.
The last clue was going to be a wish-granting machine, which would have been
too easy.
So well done. Ben, you're at the moment, you're currently in the lead with 2 points, but as
thank you, sir.
Anyone knows that's listened to this before, within one round, you could easily catch up.
Yeah. Okay.
So the second movie, the first clue for 5 points, a bass guitar.
Could be anything.
Don't know.
Let's go for the next one.
So for 4 points, a hockey stick.
I'm gonna guess.
Yep.
Is it Wayne's World?
It is.
Oh, Gemma! That's a great shot, kid. Well done.
The next clue would have been a can of Pepsi, a Reebok headband, and a gun rack.
I love the fact that you put a Reebok headband when they're doing the advertising bit.
I wouldn't have got it from any of those, so good on Gemma.
Why, thank you.
The next one, well done there.
Thank you.
The first clue for 5 points, a large lump of cheese.
That could be anything.
No one?
No.
Let's go to the next one.
So for 4 points, a bicycle.
Ooh.
So we've got a large lump of cheese and a bicycle. Are we going to go to the next round for 3 points?
Yep. Yeah.
A piece of steak.
Oh.
Christ.
No, I'm gonna go next. How about you, Ben?
Me too.
Yeah, let's go.
So for 2 points, a chapstick.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
a
God.
Chapstick.
You have bamboozled me.
No.
Give us the fifth.
No. The final clue, a learn to dance cassette.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
Yeah! Well done, Ben.
Bring the chapstick.
Oh. What's the score?
Currently, it's Gemma with 4 points, Ben with 3.
Oh, this is bullshit.
Now, this one is the hardest one I've done, and I will be blown away if you get it. The first clue, a bra.
I'm not going to risk it for a biscuit.
Nope,
this
nope,
is
nope.
So tense. It's 4-3, and it's a bra.
Nope.
The second one, a fire extinguisher.
A what?
You know what I mean.
A extinguisher.
I'm hammered. A fire extinguisher. Nope.
No.
So for 3 points, a fork.
Oh, fuck.
So we've got a bra, a fire extinguisher, and a fork.
What the fork?
That could literally be... That could be real life.
This is the hard
life.
One.
Nope.
For 2 points, a colour TV.
Oh, shit.
So a bra, a fire extinguisher, a fork, and a colour TV.
I have no idea.
I've got nothing.
And the final clue for 1 point. Ben, if you get this, it's all even.
Yeah.
A Zippo lighter.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wall-E.
What?
I'm not, you know I've not seen Wall-E, you ass!
That has nothing to do with Wall-E.
A bra. They put it on their head. A fire extinguisher. The famous space scene. A fork, a colour TV, and a Zippo.
You know I've not seen Wall-E, so I've been ruined here.
You've mugged me off. This is all to play for.
Oh, you piece of shit.
Ben, you only need 1 point and it's a draw.
Ben, let's join forces and work against.
Are you ready?
Me versus you.
This is the big one. A lot rides on this. For the listeners out there, right now it's 4-3 to Gemma.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The first clue, a pencil.
Dark Knight.
It is. Ben has won 8-4. Oh my god. I will just reveal the next clues. For 4 points it would have been a pack of cards. For 3 points a mobile phone.
Yeah.
For 2 points a coin. And if you hadn't have got it, 1 hockey pads. So just to reveal there that Ben has stole the show with 8-4. I've got an icebreaker, the tiebreaker, whatever you want to call it. Should we play it just because we're only 8 minutes into this?
Shouldn't have to.
Do we have to?
Yes, baby! I got a 5-pointer.
That's incredible.
I'm the king of quizzes.
I can't believe that.
Right then. Gemma, compose yourself.
This
is the real quiz. This is the real quiz. He's thrown a pair of shoes over a pub. What have you done? Ready?
Ready.
For 5 points. A red rose.
Godfather.
American Beauty.
Right, you're both frozen out. You both get to come back in.
All right.
A tuxedo.
Ask her some more, please.
A picture frame.
Oh, shit. Who knows? Fuck knows.
For 2 points, a doggy.
The room. It was a draw. Yay! Gemma and I drew that. Friendship handshake there.
Friendship handshake.
Well, that was all good. The winner overall is Ben.
Well done.
Standard.
On the next episode, which is our Star Wars Rogue One special, we will be bringing back an old game. I'm not going to reveal what it is. It might have a slight twist to it. But it's a one-off, so stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. We're almost at the end of this podcast, and I just want to now say, before I can just about still say my words, that we've been a bit leery, and it is our Christmas episode, but I do promise on the next Star Wars episode, which is out in 2 weeks' time, we're going to sober up. We're going to be a lot more mature. But hey, we've let our hair down.
Ish.
Why can't we have one episode where we can just get drunk? So hopefully it's funny and you guys have enjoyed this, because in the morning we're all going to be feeling like shit.
Seriously, we've had a lot to drink.
And it's only just starting, baby.
Like every episode, all 58 before this, we've had to do listener questions, and we love it. We love the contribution that our listeners give us. It wouldn't be Skip to the End. It wouldn't be our podcast without our listeners. So let's finish, as we always do, with some fantastic listener questions. Andy Burdett has said, "What is the best and the worst thing about Christmas?" Now, guys, this is a big one. So while you think about it, it's a bit like Blue Peter. Here's one I've got earlier. The best thing for me is the fact that none of us have to go to work for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Whatever job you're in,
Amen.
Whatever you're doing, even if it's retail and you're doing Box Day sales, you get Christmas Day off. You get to be with your family, have a beer, watch crap on telly and just enjoy it.
The best thing, last Christmas, myself and my boyfriend decided to watch Wolf of Wall Street. Sorry, I'm struggling to say the word. Wolf of Wall Street. And we had the best Christmas. We just ate like cheese and meats and we had loads of drink. Best Christmas ever.
The worst thing for me is all these musicians that suddenly only come out at Christmas time. I don't get it for me. It's like, where are you all year round? So people like Cliff Richard, like What is it that suddenly means that you can bring out this Christmas album and Ollie Murs and all these knobheads and they do my head in? It's a long time since I've wished anyone dead, and I wouldn't want to, you know, I'm not going to go down that territory. People like all these musicians, they come out at Christmas and bring out that album and it does my head in. And I don't want to hear it, and I'm sick of it. So all those guys, piss off and stop ruining Christmas for everyone. Ben, what do you love? You must love a good beer at Christmas.
I'm not a religious man. The religious aspect of Christmas means nothing to me. All I care about is me and my mum and my stepdad and my brother eating lovely food and drinking lovely booze.
Amen to that.
That's all definitely. It's about.
Is there anything you don't like about Christmas?
Yeah, all of it. All the rest of it. The fact that the decorations go up in like January.
The year before, yeah.
Why the fuck have we got these lights up every goddamn day? Christmas is a two-day event. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
That's it.
Anything Amen. Prior or after that is bullshit.
Yeah. And those idiots that get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to a next sale, other stores are available, but to get up there and get up at four on Boxing Day, don't bother, because if you get £2 off a pair of socks, don't bother. Stay at home and watch films or listen to our podcast with your family.
Yeah. And plus as well, Dark Bunny Tees are doing an amazing socks deal
Look at Gemma. Yes. Look at Gemma doing the old business there. And also, the shops are online. Don't leave your house to go to Marks and Spencer's at 6 a.m.
Why should
they have an online shop?
Why should you?
And do you know what? Christmas for me nowadays, now, thanks to Disney, which we don't give credit to sometimes, for giving us Star Wars every Christmas.
Yeah.
It is.
Absolutely.
I bloody love Disney.
Next question. At Fireball Darren has said, what is your favourite parody of a movie that has been done on The Simpsons? After your topic on the last one.
That is tremendous.
That's a great question.
So mine is on the Treehouse of Horror episode 24.
I love that. Okay, Gemma. Yes. Mark is looking in the air, rubbing his chin as if, I've just thought of this. This is my favourite.
This is my topic.
He's clearly looked this up before and pretending like it's off the cuff.
So they did a spoof to 101 Dalmatians, which was 2 dozen and one greyhound. And if you remember the song, see my vest, see my vest, made from real gorilla chest.
See my vest, see my vest.
For me, that is one of the greatest episodes of The Simpsons ever. So for me, it's that. But they also recently did a Del Toro intro, which was amazing, with Pan's Lab and everything. Gemma, give it to me.
They did a Miyazaki tribute. They did tributes to, I've had so many White Russians. They did My Neighbor Totoro. They did Kiki's Delivery Service. They did Spirited Away. They did a particular montage where they paid tribute to Miyazaki. Oh my God, I'm so drunk.
Okay. Ben, what did you do?
It was their version of Lord of the Flies.
Oh, when on the island.
Yeah, exactly. So
great episode. Bart
and Milhouse and whatnot, and the bus ended up on the island.
Such a good episode.
At Diddy King One has asked, he's recently watched the Star Wars films and the prequels 1, 2 and 3. In your opinion, who would you get to replace Anakin Skywalker? Because he doesn't think that Hayden Christian was any good.
No, he doesn't. Of course. Okay. We all know that.
In my opinion, I think Ryan Gosling would have done well, because that was a few years ago and he was younger. Yeah. I think he would have done really well in that. He would have actually acted.
Yeah. I don't think anybody else could be the best person for that. So yeah, I'm totally with you. Ryan Gosling, definitely.
Leo DiCaprio.
It's
not just me saying, hey, listen, Leo.
Yeah.
At that point, apparently Leo was the guy, one of the front runners, and they chose Hayden Christensen.
How is that? How is that?
Well, I don't know.
No.
Next question comes from a big-time listener who's been there from the start, Jezebelly.
Hello, Jezebelly.
We all know Jezebelly. Big fan.
If you could swap bodies with anyone in the world, who would it be?
Okay, I'm going to say Adam Sandler, because...
Because I'd kill myself.
I would totally talk him out of the Netflix-like promotion.
Yeah.
Just say, look, tell you what... Go back to Happy Gilmore. Go back to Billy Madison. Come on, let's see some great comedy. So I would totally
That's swap a good
bodies
one.
With wow. Adam Sandler.
Ben?
No, you.
Okay. So for me, does it obviously Tommy Wiseau?
Oh, there we go.
I would love to be Tommy Wiseau. I think he's a god. I think his brain feature is on a level of a genius that people don't understand him. And I genuinely believe he's got everything that you could ever want in a man. And his direction, he's just on another level that people don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, Dougie.
Ben? Anyone?
I'm going to say Christian Bale because...
Oh, yes. Oh,
he's the kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that no one tells him what to do.
No. And if you try, you get ripped.
You get told to fuck the fuck off because...
Yeah.
Hey, Christian, did this film? No. Hey, Christian, did this film? Yes. You know, it's all about him. And I get that. That's all I want to do.
I love it.
Just my business, my choice.
And he's done it, and he will never change, which is always good.
And why not?
Yeah.
Zombie teeth clothing. Your favourite ever monologue from a film?
Right.
Gemma knows it.
My hand is in the air.
Yeah.
And I am going to go for... Glenn Ross.
That's mine too. I don't know the exact words. I think I've got a feeling Gemma knows it. That's mine.
Right. It's ABC. Always be closing. Right. Now, I've worked in a sales environment, and at some point, I was shown this monologue by my sales manager. This is the singular best monologue that I've ever seen in a movie, ever. And I'm stopped.
And Ben's agreeing.
That's it.
I'm nodding.
I'm going to disagree because I think that Quint in Jaws delivers the best monologue of all time.
It's tremendous.
It's great. It's great.
I'm not going to disagree.
And he was drunk like you two are. And I am. But what a monologue that was.
Never.
What a monologue by Quint. Couple more questions. We've got Vintage GT. Should Arnie be involved in the new Predator reboot? He's got feelings about cameos and doesn't feel that on this one we should. And to be honest, when I watched the most recent Ghostbusters, I think that film would have been better if they hadn't have brought Bill Murray on board and Dan Aykroyd and everyone. Mm. I would like to see it without Arnie. Break away and do your own thing now. And don't mention Arnie. Like Terminator when they brought him back as CGI. Leave it. Leave it alone.
I'm with Vintage GT. I don't think Arnie should be involved.
Leave it. What do you reckon, Ben?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Would you like Arnie in the new Predator film, or would you like...
No!
I'd rather new people did that.
Yeah, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
What is a 70-year-old man going to do?
Two more questions. Your favourite ever dream sequence in a movie? That comes from Thomas Hill.
Right, I've got an answer. Mm. Dumb and Dumber, when Lloyd Christmas dreams about his fantasy Mary. I would love to see that in the actual real film.
Yeah,
Ben, have you got one?
I quite like the one in the film we've just rewatched. The one where
the dude
is going through the women's legs.
And he's upside down in the music.
Yeah, that's
incredible.
With the 10-pin bowling headdress, yes.
Mine would be American Beauty when all the rose petals are landing on. And I think that's really good in his fantasy that this girl's there. And I think that's really well done. To finish off all the questions, predict now, guys. Will the new Star Wars film be better than Episode 7?
We shall wait.
And that comes from Matthew Davis.
We don't know.
Yeah, he's wanting us to predict now. So next week.
It might be fucking amazing, but we don't know.
I think we're going to be blown away. I think Gareth Evans?
Yeah.
Whatever his name is.
That's Edward the guy from The Raid, right?
I think he's going to deliver us a film that we don't expect. I think it's going to be dark, bleak, there's going to be deaths, we're going to see Vader, and I think we will be talking about it. But Episode 7 was a long time coming. It was an event in history where I remember me and Ben going and having those feelings of, this is a new Star Wars film, is it going to be good? And it's an event that everyone in the world stood still for that moment.
Yeah.
And it's good that we now get another Star Wars film 12 months later. But nothing will recreate that fact of news. So Ben's being sick. But I just really look forward to the fact that we get to enjoy another Star Wars film again. Right, I'm going to end this because this is really turning shocking. So I'm going to just say, keep your questions coming. The best way for them is on skiptheend.co.uk. And we'll answer them all in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of the Skip to the End podcast. Episode 59? Is it 59?
Episode 59.
59!
Yeah.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Absolutely. Guys, I just want to make you aware that on episode 60, which is in 2 weeks' time, it's Star Wars Rogue One.
Oh my God.
Holy moly.
This is the film that people have been saying is the film of the year. They always wait till Christmas, Disney. This is the one. Star Wars, a Rogue One.
It's big.
It's huge.
Big news, yeah.
How the flip have we got a new Star Wars movie?
Already. It seems like 2 days ago that we were reviewing episode 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Gemma.
Yes.
Your rewatch choice, what was it?
It was Home Alone. We're going to make this a big episode. So let's make it big with Home Alone.
60 episodes and we've never ever reviewed a film by John Hughes.
Right?
That blows my mind.
Yes. Yeah. So we're going to have a great time for the next episode.
We're going to also play a brand new game show. It might be one that we've used before. Yes. Who knows? Stick around for that. But it won't be anything like the last one.
We'll see. And it was also my choice for the topic, the new topic. Best war films of all time.
That already scares me because I can't think of how I'm going to... I don't even know where I'm going to start. Top three war films of all time is insane.
It's a big topic.
It's huge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone's got to say.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to be announcing the winner of the competitions. I announced 4 competition prizes today. Dark Bunny tees, we've got jumpers, we've got Bad Santa Christmas jumpers, we've got Blu-ray box sets, we've got DVDs, we've got loads to give away. It's actually insane the amount of stuff we're giving away. And for the listeners out there, trust me, on the next episode, I'll make sure I've got a sack full again ready to give you all.
Always.
Ready to unload.
And as always, it'll just be fun and games. Absolutely. Anything else you guys have got to say?
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Someone painted April Fool and dripped like letters on a dead end sign. I had my foot on the gas as I left the road and blew out my mind. 8 miles out of Memphis and I got no spare. 8 miles straight up downtown somewhere. I just dropped in. See what condition my condition was in. I said I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.